This is the one set in post-apocalyptic London,
where Susie deserves a jolly good smack bottom.
Oh, and there are Daleks.
Who have brought flying saucers.
And wicker baskets.
And something called a slither?
Yeah, I know.
It's called the Dalek Invasion of Earth.
Here we go!
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space.
Encountering Dalek, Stalinude, and the Cybertronic race.
Centaurans look like taters and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than
who back when?
Who back when? Hello, and welcome to episode 010, or 010 if you will, of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Flappy.
And I am Pumpkin. How you doing?
And today, we're going to be reviewing The Dalek Invasion of Earth.
Shit, yes we are.
Oh my god.
So exciting. I'm so happy.
Like, as I said to you when I first walked in, first episode is a 5 out of 5.
Totally. I mean, just, I absolutely agree with you.
Absolutely. That's not to say it got that much worse. The first episode blew my mind.
Totally. No, my mind hole was blown wide open. Before we start off with the Dalek Invasion of Earth, though, we did agree pre-recording that we're going to give a shout-out, an international shout-out.
Who back when? Internationals.
That means a jingle.
To Robert, or Robert, if you will.
Robert. Yeah. In Germany. Congratulations, you are officially our first German fan, or at least our first official German fan.
Yeah, and I was heartened to have a German fan, but also disappointed to hear that Doctor Who isn't that big in Germany.
Yeah, and exactly, that there's not that much access to it. That's really sad, but very
Robert's,
happy.
Yeah, Robert's flying the flag. I mean,
yeah, and through the magic of iTunes and whatnot, you know, people everywhere can rejoice in the splendour of Doctor Who.
The world will be a better place.
Who Back When International? Over. Thanks for listening, Robert. All right, so, Dalek Invasion of Earth, do you want to get going?
Where to begin?
Episode 1.
Well, I guess the start of episode 1 wouldn't be a terrible place. So the first thing we see, we get a tiny little scene of an oddly dressed man.
It's like a dude with Frankel braces.
Yeah, walking into the river. Seems to remove a helmet of some kind.
Yeah, which is painful. Like, he cries out in agony when he pulls it off, right?
Yeah, this already just gives you a little appreciation of the kind of shit that's going to go down.
It really sets the tone.
It really does.
And he basically, like, drowns himself, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we get a title card, and what does it say?
World's End?
By Terry Nation.
Yeah.
We're back to Mr. Nation. If I could live anywhere, I'd like to live in the Terry Nation.
The Nation of Terry?
Yeah.
My middle name, by the way.
It's a beautiful name.
It is beautiful. So,
the TARDIS materialises. Do you want to go on?
Yeah, so the TARDIS materialises, and we see the Doctor inside furiously examining dials.
And also,
as most episodes seem to begin.
And also providing us with some of the worst acting so far on the show.
Really? By whom?
By him. It's just him in frame, and he's saying stuff like, "It's not clear. What's gone wrong?"
Do you know what? I'm starting to form such an emotional bond with Hartnell. Like, I'm starting to forgive him more than I did initially. Like, these little things he does, I just find them cute now.
Yeah. Actually, should we also maybe mention something? We have been poking fun at Hartnell for, this is maybe a paraphrase, shitting all over his lines. in the past, but we did quite recently read on Wikipedia, didn't we, Flappy?
Yeah.
That he actually was suffering from some sort of malaise, and for this reason was having quite a hard time remembering his lines, which ultimately led to him leaving the show.
That was why he left in the end. I mean, this is some time before he left, but, you know, it could be early onset stuff.
Exactly.
Basically, I feel terrible.
I feel terrible as well.
Reading that made me feel like an arsehole.
Yeah, that's not to say that we may or may not still include some sound bites later on, but they will be veiled under the fake pretense of the contextual information.
I do love the guy.
I love the guy as well. Anyway, so apologies to the estate of William Hartnell. Mm-hmm. Okie dokie, Susie arrives in frame.
Yeah, so obviously things aren't clear. As they never are. This is the start of every episode. What the hell's going on? The TARDIS seems to be in... Well, it's not in free fall, but it seems to be bouncing around. They're floating.
That's true, but I think almost this landing or materialization is almost more precise than any other.
Right.
Because, Susie checks the radiation level, says that there are Earth readings. This is the very first time...
The first time they say, there's oxygen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, so now we don't have to just open the door or roll down the window and poke our heads out and just die.
Yeah, and the Doctor seems pretty certain, actually, that it's London.
Yeah, he even says, I don't want to boast, but we might be somewhere in London.
Man,
opens doors, they exit.
Yeah, and the first thing we see is a massive sign saying it is forbidden to dump bodies into the river. My Which first thought, awesome. Well, my first thought was, well, yes.
Yeah.
But then we said,
goes without saying.
Yeah, you'd hope that would go without saying.
We live by that credo today, and there are no signs along the Thames.
But it led me to my second thought, which was, man, some bad shit must have gone there.
How many people do you reckon dump bodies in the Thames before is someone, like, before the authorities reckon, yeah, we should put up a sign?
Yeah, just in case people don't know.
Anyway, they confirm that it's London, and the doctor is sort of unsure of, quote, the time factor.
Mm.
And this is really weird. Like, Ian says he doesn't mind if there's a year's discrepancy or two.
Yeah.
But when Doc then elaborates and says it might be the 19th century, it might be the 25th century,
mm.
Bob jumps in and goes, that's fine.
Yeah.
What?
It's good either way. It's all good. Do you think they're just so... you know,
knackered.
Well, just utterly committed to the idea that they're never going to make it home, that they will take anything going.
600 years off, fine by me.
Yeah.
Close enough.
Not too bad. Is it as much as... Yeah. Is it as much as 600
years? Oh, sorry, 500 years.
Yeah. Get it right.
No, apologies. Anyway, then Susie turns up as well, tries to climb something to check the surroundings, and then falls back down just in order to ruin it for everyone else. And she does this in... Well, she ruins everything in terms
of... I don't know if it was entirely her fault, but the bridge seems to start collapsing and collapses on the TARDIS.
Exactly. Locking them outside the TARDIS, cue the Davis principle.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for the episode where the Davis principle doesn't apply. I think it could be a long time yet. But Ian's first reaction, you know, being the man that he is let's burn through it.
Yeah, exactly.
But
what does he say? Like an acetyl?
He needs some specialist piece of...
Yeah, like a cutting flame, essentially.
Like, that they haven't got.
Yeah.
But then he thinks, oh, actually, I can just manhandle it. Like, he's a manhandler, and he can just manhandle it.
He also receives the very first compliment from Doc,
mm-hmm.
ever, really. Mm-hmm. After trying to manhandle the thing, being stopped by Doc, he goes, like, he wisely suggests that
he find
a way back in before looking around, and the Doc goes, that's intelligent.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good.
Yeah. Like, the Doctor has given Ian quite a lot of backhanded compliments. Like, he's kind of left Ian to do things, like, allows him to, you know, become leader of Aztecs and stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, he does kind of have a respect for him, but this is the first time he's really verbalised it.
Yeah, but strangely, like, even though he's exhibited such a high level of intelligence as to be complimented by the Doctor himself, he then promptly basically disrupts this pattern by saying, I don't think this is Earth. Like, we've stood here easily 15 to 20 minutes. This, by the way, is 5 minutes into the episode.
All right, but
and they haven't heard a sound. That's what he says. Like, we haven't heard a sound. And doesn't the Doctor even remark?
He does say, like, this can't be London. Well, at least not the London I know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, fair enough.
It's fine.
Sorry, I'm being too harsh. But actually, because we're going to, later on at the end of the episode, we'll see how nicely it bookends it, I think either Ian or the Doctor says, like, we can't, for instance, hear the chiming of Big Ben.
And they also can't hear any birds.
Yeah, that's true. There's, like, no sound whatsoever.
There's nothing, yeah.
Anyway, so the Doc proceeds to blame Susie for ruining the whole trip.
Like, I don't think it can be Susan's fault that a bridge has come down. Like, that's really harsh.
Sure, but whatever.
Okay, she's caused a bit of a landslide, but if a bridge is falling down, it's not really your fault. Like, she was just trying to get up there to get a vantage point.
Yeah, sure. But
she was trying to help. I know she's rubbish at it, but she was just trying to help.
Oh, no, I totally agree. But the Doctor does not agree. the Doctor thinks that she's ruined everything for everyone. So,
and he
says, I think we need a soundbite.
We absolutely do.
Soundbite.
What you need is a jolly good smack bottom.
Nice! If you like, Susie, I can provide that. Anyway.
No sexual connotations at all. Well, David's going to supply that later in the episode.
Oh, yes, that is very true. Gorilla
Dave. In a very real way.
Anyway, time to cue up the splitting up trope.
Yeah.
So Doc and Ian, they head to a warehouse. And,
we should mention also that Susan has to stay behind because she's quite badly injured.
Yeah, she's basically fractured her ankle or something.
But again, a device to keep Susan out of the way.
Yeah, exactly. Keep the women on one side.
Yeah.
And then the dudes on the other.
And the capable men can go off and explore.
So they do. They head to a warehouse, ascending the stairs, and, like, basically enter it. And we have a very different... I've made a note of saying we have a very different and disparate portrayal of the Doc. Because earlier on, first he gives Ian a compliment, says he's intelligent. Then all of a sudden he reprimands Susie for no reason whatsoever after an episode where he was like super just protective and grandfatherly.
I think it works, but I'll leave it till later to say why I think that works.
But then all of a sudden Ian, as they ascend the stairs, Ian goes, "Careful, Doctor." And the Doctor goes, "I'm not a half-wit." Just make up your mind.
He's grouchy. Like, he's been climbing. He's, like, he's tense.
Sure. All right, fine.
It's fine.
Anyway, meanwhile, Bob is back with Susie, and she sees the poster. Actually, she's not with Susie. She walks away, and she sees the poster.
Yeah, that's right.
Realises, finally, that they're not in their own time.
Yeah, and she sees a dead body in the river.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
She sees a dead body in the river, and it's fairly disgusting.
It's pretty gross.
And then runs into a bloke.
That's later on. We've got, actually, she hasn't seen the body yet, but it doesn't matter.
Okay, do you know what? When you said first cut back to Barb, we do cut to Barb for like a second, her seeing the crazy sign, but then it goes to Ian and the Doctor.
Yeah, you're right. You're totally right.
Looking out over Battersea Power Station.
Actually, no, it cuts back to the warehouse where someone is spying on them. Someone is looking at them, and while they are looking at what is essentially a like redrawn photo of Battersea.
Yeah.
With like two chimneys broken.
Yeah.
And Ian, quite wisely, I think, assumes that, oh, well, maybe this appeared in London's history is like driven by nuclear power.
Yeah, pretty cool. Which makes sense. Yeah. But they also find out what year they're in, which is 2164.
Oh my god, that's so going to be a screenshot on the website. The calendar, it's fantastic. My note is Doc finds a calendar with 2165 literally sellotaped to one page.
But also, seeing as this place is quite disused, there haven't been people there for a while, could it not be the case that it's a really old calendar?
I did not think about that.
Could it not be a 20-year-old calendar?
If you're so right.
Yeah.
That's a freaking good point.
But
we have no idea.
We'll take it as Bible.
Sure. Yeah. It is 2165. Probably exactly.
Is it 65 or 64?
I've written 2165. I may be mistaken.
Me too.
Anyway, so then Bob.
That's not quibble.
Yeah. If the 25th century is good enough for Bob, then surely 1 year's discrepancy is good enough for us. So then we come back to Bob. That's where she sees the body. And then when she runs back to get Susie, that's where she's lost him. Lost her.
Yeah, and then Tyler turns up.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no, it's not Tyler.
No, it's someone else.
Tyler has taken Susan.
Exactly.
Which is apparently fine.
Yeah, she finds some honcho who's like a guerrilla soldier and says that Susie's with Tyler. Gunfire is heard in the background.
Yeah.
And then they run off.
Yeah.
Cut back to the warehouse
where Doctor and Ian have found a dead man with a strange helmet on.
Yeah, the same kind of Frankel brace.
Yeah, that we saw in the very beginning. Mm. And they surmise, quite wisely, that it's some sort of communication device.
Yeah.
And the guy has definitely been murdered. He's got a knife sticking out of his back.
And he's carrying a whip. There's a whip next to him, and Ian picks up the whip.
Oh, I don't remember this at all. Yeah. Did he do anything with the whip?
Yeah, he then later on throws it away.
Okay.
Like, you're in clearly a hostile environment. There's a knife at your disposal. You have no weapons. We haven't invented the sonic screwdriver yet. If you were Steven Seagal, you would pull the knife out of this dead robo dude's chest and use that to protect yourself later on.
If you were Steven Seagal, you wouldn't really need the knife.
Okay, that is true.
Because these robo men, spoiler alert, robo men, controlled by the Daleks, they're not exactly agile.
The devil you saved. But, yeah, okay. Well,
Then we cut back to Susan and Bob. It's a wonderful sequence.
First we got Ian almost plummeting. I think we have a little bit of warehouse time, do we not? Oh, maybe I'm mistaken. I thought Ian almost plummets to his death.
No, I think that's later.
Okay, all right. So
Susan and Bob. I think it's a brilliant scene. Yeah, with the drums.
Oh, shit, yeah. Like, the drums that are gradually getting more and more out of sync.
Yeah.
It's such a tense moment. Fantastic.
And brilliant landscape shots of London. Places I know. I was actually quite interested to see what they look like in the 60s. Like, yeah.
It is a fantastic scene.
Yeah, Susan's being carried by Tyler.
Do we see that already?
Ace drums. Yeah.
Well, we cut back to Ian and the Doc anyway.
Yeah, and they spy a flying saucer.
Yeah.
Now, what I knew about this episode before watching it, obviously there were Daleks involved, hence the title. I thought that these were going to be Toclophane. Because you don't actually get a very good sense of how big these saucers are. Do you remember the Toclophane?
No.
From the John Sim, David Tennant era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember
that. So when John Sim takes over takes over the Earth.
Yeah.
He does so with an army of Toclophane.
What
which
are they?
They're little flying saucers. They turn out actually to be humans.
Oh, the heads.
Yeah.
Oh,
they turn
I
out to
that.
Actually be humans. It's fairly disgusting when
yeah,
they open it.
And there's just a severed head in there controlling
yeah.
them.
But they look just like Toclophane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So creepy.
Yeah, horrible.
Super creepy. Well, the UFO is and the effects are taken straight out of Plan 9 from Outer Space. It is fantastic. And we get like a shot of them like buzzing over the Houses of Parliament, I think.
Yeah.
By the way, could you see the Houses of Parliament from Battersea?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I haven't thought that through.
I don't think so.
Anyway, back to the encampment. So the two guys start talking about...
No. We're not there yet. Bob, no, dude, we haven't even fucking seen an encampment yet. We've got Bob finally finding Tyler Durden. And they're, like, running into a tunnel.
Okay, yeah.
He's carrying Susie in his arms, and they're, like, trying to be quiet, but Bob loudly stumbles over an empty paint bucket, which appears to be an object that is just littered. Littering all of Battersea. There are just empty paint buckets everywhere.
You don't know. Maybe the Daleks tried to spruce the place up. Like, you know, a bit of white paint everywhere, and they just discarded it.
Very possible.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, and then we cut back to Ian and Doc. We're not in an encampment yet. I'm sorry, dude. That happens in a little bit. Cut back to Ian and Doc, the back of the TARDIS, and, oh, by the way, on their way, we've seen the dude who's been stalking them. Like, they were being watched by someone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that's Gorilla Dave. But, like, they've been watched by someone in the warehouse. Ian just throws the whip away. They walk out of the warehouse. Gorilla Dave pops his head out, picks up the whip. Kind of like, oh, maybe they're not that bad if they discard a whip. So now we're, like, back with Ian and Doc. They're at the TARDIS. They can't find the Chiquitas. And Ian bangs on another empty paint bucket and shouts, why do they do it?
Why do they keep doing this?
Something like
this is something that's revisited in modern Doctor Who. So it's a running joke of modern Doctor Who that so David Tennant or Matt Smith always tells his companion, like, stay where you are.
Yeah.
Like, don't run off.
Oh, yeah, actually, you're very right about that.
So this is, like, the first instance of that.
Yeah.
Is what I'm seeing. Yeah, the running joke that's been going for 50 years of stay where you are.
And no one listens. Like,
and no one ever listens.
Yeah, you're very right.
Although they were forced into moving, but... Mm. Companions don't stay still.
Yeah, but
there wouldn't be much of a story if companions
true.
Did stay still.
No, that is very true. And Doc and Ian don't know about it. They haven't seen anyone else. They haven't even seen the stalker yet.
Exactly.
But they have seen the flying saucer, so they should probably assume that something's
amiss. And they heard the gunshots.
Yeah. So then we cut back to BS and Tyler Durden, and they've stopped next to a poster basically issuing a veto against elephants.
Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of shit is vetoed in
this. Yeah, a lot. And it transpires this elephant poster is, like, it opens a secret passage to essentially the resistance.
Yeah.
That's the encampment.
Yeah.
Kablamo. Dude, go for it.
Fine. So we get the first open discussion about Robo-Men. You know, and these are the guys with the hats.
Yeah, we meet the resistance.
Yeah, we meet three people from the resistance. We meet Dusseldorf, Dortmund.
Dortmund.
In a wheelchair.
He is referred to as Charles Xavier in my notes.
Uh-huh, okay, fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll be Dusseldorf to me.
Excellent. On okay. Actually, I prefer Dusseldorf.
We also have Gorilla Dave.
Gorilla Dave, yeah.
Who's going to become really important.
Absolutely.
And we also
have... He's very hunky. He looks exactly like the English guy in Enterprise.
Yeah, I could see
he
that.
He looks a lot like him. I can't remember
in either case, I don't find that very sexy.
Mm.
But, yeah, fine.
No, but he is, like, the attractive one.
But somebody does.
Yeah, someone does.
Yeah, somebody does. And the third person is called...
Tyler Durden.
Yeah, oh yeah, of course, Tyler.
Tyler.
So they discuss openly the idea of Robo-Men.
Yeah.
And the first thing that Barb is asked is, can you cook?
Yeah.
she does look like she can
cook. It's Tyler, isn't it? Like, it's like,
is it Tyler?
I think so. It basically immediately tries to recruit her as a cook. There's literally no one eye-banging her. There's no one going like, hey, can you give moralizing head? Literally just, can you cook?
Yeah, which also gives an idea of how desperate things have got.
Yeah, that is very true. And then Charles Xavier, a.k.a. Dortmund, actually I put him down as Dorkman,
asks what Susan does, to which she says, I eat!
Yeah. Awesome line.
Yeah, brilliant line.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, well, this is the start of Susan's character, the start and end, as it turns out. But she does have a little attitude going.
Yeah, totally. I love it, by the way.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's
this
brilliant.
Is the first time that we get to see Susan actually act as a human
being. No, I wouldn't say the first time.
I don't mean that in a racist manner. She acts as an individual.
I would say it's the first time since the first episode we actually see Susan do something that, that isn't completely just...
No, that's
true. Let's that's run, true. Or I'm being touched, or, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
And they're also discussing attack plans.
Yeah, Professor X and Tyler Durden, they're going through an attack plan.
We don't know what they're attacking yet.
Yeah, that's true.
We know there are Robo-Men, but we don't
know
what
are Robo-Men who are, like, the people who have been converted into robots. By the way, Cybermen.
Well, yeah. Like,
they're even, like, their headgear, the Frankel braces, even look a little bit like Cybermen gear.
If you look at my notes, which I'm not going to do properly, I did write Cybermen ?
Yeah.
But not really. Like, they're not really Cybermen.
No, but it is very similar to the theme.
It's a similar design, but that kind of antennae thing, like, it does make sense for communication.
That is true.
Like, that is a good communication.
Do you remember the Dalek puppets?
Dalek puppets?
Yeah, I think that's Tennant times, where they have, like, a human being turns up, and then all of a sudden the Dalek eye comes out of the forehead.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Do you reckon these are, like, early prototype Dalek puppets?
Not at all. No.
Okay.
I think this was a first stab at Daleks taking over people, and I think they did a really good job of it.
Fair enough. Yeah.
They don't explain the mechanisms that are going on inside the head very well, other than to say their brains can be scrambled by this Dalek technology.
Yeah, you're right.
And also, they're completely under the control of the Daleks.
That is true. It is, however, a trope that is frequently revisited in Doctor Who.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's my note. Cybermen?
Yeah, I've got that here somewhere.
But I actually don't think the link's there.
Okay. No, fair enough.
Because also, Cybermen are a completely separate entity from Daleks.
Yeah, no, dude, I wasn't saying these are Cybermen. I was saying this could have been an inspiration for Cybermen later on.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if the original Cybermen... We're going to get to the Cybermen in Troughton, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But... if we're wrong about that...
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. If it's Pertwee or whoever... Who gives a shit? We'll get to him. But
we give a shit.
Yeah, well, we will give a shit. The point I was trying to make was, I wonder if this might be sort of an early inspiration for including this trope in Doctor Who.
Possibly.
Because it is something that is very frequently revisited.
Yeah.
Anyway, cut back to... Well, not cut back to. We've got Gorilla Dave. He says he's going to pop back out and look for Doc and Ian.
Yeah.
And then we cut back to Doc and Ian by the TARDIS.
Yeah, who have now seen the sign.
Yeah.
I haven't got a laughing... Oh, stupid place to put a poster.
Yeah.
Well, and the Doc makes a very good point that actually, no, if you were going to dispose of a body quietly, this would be the perfect spot.
Yeah, that's true. And then,
Ian does make a very intelligent comment.
Oh, what's that?
Which is that he says, well, there must have been a plague. Bring out your dead.
Yeah. Oh, very good, yeah.
Which is actually what happens. We get, like, a little 10-second exposition of what actually happened in the preceding 6 months. But there was a plague.
There is
a very good reason
for that. Yeah. No, very true. So in the meantime, Gorilla Dave is observing them from afar. From, like, a window, mm-hmm. and he sees two robo dudes approaching them, or three maybe even.
Yeah.
And then shortly thereafter, Doc and Ian are surrounded by these robo dudes. There are, like, four of them at this point.
Yeah.
And
Ian's first reaction is to try and talk to them.
Yeah.
Which, again, is sensible. And in unison, they all say stop. Which, again, made me think of Cybermen, but let's cut that.
I know.
But in unison, they all hold up their hands and say stop.
Yeah. Gorilla Dave tries to help them to no avail, and then Ian, very loudly, right in front of the robo-dude, suggests a plan of escape.
Yeah, diving in the water.
Yeah.
Because, as mentioned, these Robo-Men are not very agile. I cannot imagine, with their kind of movements, them swimming.
Mm.
So it's a good plan.
Yeah, on the other hand, someone else in the universe who is not particularly agile and also robotic in nature is just about to resurface. Namely, end of episode one is... We look at the Thames, Ian and Doc are just about to dive in, and then a white Dalek surfaces. Kerblamatron, end of episode one.
Absolutely terrifying. And
fantastic.
At the time, you wouldn't have known that it was the Daleks. Like, this is the first time in Doctor Who that something is being revisited.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, obviously, we saw the Daleks in episode two.
Because, so, like, the name of the story arc, or the serial, wasn't official at the time.
This was called World's End.
Yeah, that's all we know. Or, like, had we been in 1964, that would be all that we had known.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic conclusion to episode one. I can only imagine, like, the week of suspenseful waiting.
Absolutely.
I was like, oh my god, we saw a white Dalek, it's amazing, they're white now, it's so cool. Anyway.
So the Doctor and Ian are fucked all ends up.
Yeah.
Got Robo-Men, one end, Dalek appearing from the water. Episode 2.
The Daleks, it's official now. In case you missed the end of the last episode, this one's about Daleks.
So the first thing we see is the Dalek asking the Robo-Men why the humans were allowed to be brought so close to the river.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
No?
Oh, yeah, no, I think you're probably right, yeah. Okay, yeah, sorry, go for it.
So there's something about the river, you get the river sort of brought into your brain, and the Dalek reveals that they are the masters of the Earth.
That's my note as well, they say that very frequently. It seems almost as though masters of the Earth
Controller le monde, yeah, it's constant.
It seems as though that's like the early version of exterminates. Because
hear exterminates.
Oh, I know.
An exterminate.
Dude, I've made a note later on the exact first instance of exterminates.
But the Doctor's reaction to all of this is quite surprising.
Well,
he's just incredulous. He's just, he's just like, no, you haven't.
Yeah,
no, come on.
Exactly. My note is Doc and Ian reject the notion of invasion.
Yeah. I don't think Ian says very much. The Doctor's just basically like, that's impossible. Like, you have no idea what it would take to invade the Earth. Like, have you killed all living matter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Despite everything he's seen. Like, you could put a few two and twos together there, but...
Yeah. Right, so then we cut back to the Resistance, where there's also a radio transmission from the Daleks.
And the Daleks are putting out a broadcast, messaging people to say that they are the masters of the Earth, which I'm sure they've heard a few times already by now.
If you hadn't noticed this already, then just bob up to the surface and take a peek around. Pretty sure everything's been vetoed.
But essentially their message is, we are masters of the Earth. If you give up now, you'll be allowed to live.
Yeah, and this is your last chance, essentially what they're saying. Okay. Like, we're going to destroy London or something, they say.
Which one of the rebels, I believe it was Dusseldorf, says, obey motorised dustbins.
Yeah, I know, it's nice.
Which does kind of bring you thudding back to reality. they are about as mobile as dustbins.
Yeah. We also encounter another member of the Resistance who's going to play quite a big part in this show, namely Blondie. I can't remember her name.
Jenny.
Jenny, I've got it down as Blondie.
Jenny's a bitch.
Jenny is a complete B-word.
Throughout, in fact.
Yeah,
we have 5 episodes of Jenny.
Oh, Blondie is a total bitch, but she's seeing to Susie's ankle, which is good. Recognises that nothing's been broken, and then goes like, why didn't you put a wet bandage over it? Susie goes, we've just arrived.
Yeah.
And Blondie's response is, oh, I see. What? Wait, what do you mean, oh, I see? Oh, you've just arrived. How the fuck could anyone just have arrived?
Just arrived at the encampment.
Yeah, from where? Well, how long has this invasion been going on?
It does make logical sense.
She
could have just tripped over outside, and she's just come inside. Like, she's just come in to the encampment.
I'm sure there was something else in this whole dialogue where basically BS make it clear that they don't know what's going on. Like, they don't know about Robodudes, they don't know about Daleks. They surely don't know about Robodudes because other people are telling them what Robodudes are. So, how is that plausible? Totally impossible.
There is a little scene, I think it's with the Doctor and Ian, where they try to describe why it is they don't know anything about the Dalek invasion.
Like they're from out of town or something?
Yeah, something like that.
That's basically it.
Have you been living under... Oh no, have you been on the moon base?
That's what it is! I did make a note of that. And that's
the Doctor
later on.
Yes, quite so. Yeah,
No, that, you're right. That's later on.
Yeah, but it's true. Dalek? Susan and Barb give no such explanation.
Yeah. There is, however, a nice piece of social criticism. Something about, like, this isn't the 20th century when people had, like, everyone had machine guns. It's something along those lines. Basically saying that in the century when this serial was filmed, people were incredibly violent, and in the future, 2165, they're no longer.
Well, just 1964, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah, no,
20 years ago, everyone had a machine gun.
What? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, it's not true. I'm saying it's a nice way of just administering some social criticism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like the time between the 20th century and the Daleks invading was lovely.
Anyway, Gorilla Dave arrives, and he's got a crate of apples. Is it Gorilla Dave? I think it is Gorilla Dave. And he's got a crate of apples. Yeah, he tells Tyler Durden and Professor X that the department store has plenty of stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
Which suggests to me this whole invasion business hasn't been going on for very long.
No.
There are fresh apples.
Yeah. Like, London's awash with food, in fact.
Yeah, but that's ridiculous because we will find out that there were 6 months of, like, a plague. during which I'm guessing that department stores closed or people stopped eating apples.
Yeah, you wouldn't think apple picking would be high on the agenda.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But still, there are apples.
Maybe in, like, 2164, like, they've got special preserving techniques for apples. I don't know.
It's very possible. Anyway, Gorilla Dave says he saw Ian and Doc, and he says that they were taken to the Dalek Saucer at the heliport in Chelsea, which is a lovely part of town, by the way.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the landed saucer in Chelsea.
Yeah, and we get a little conversation where Ian doesn't quite understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Because the Daleks were destroyed.
Exactly.
In episode two.
I needed this contextual information
myself.
Yeah,
I did, actually. I needed updating.
Yeah.
The Doc explains that that's like a million years in the future.
Yeah, exactly.
Which makes sense, but as we have discussed, why is it that a million years in the future the Daleks are so far behind where they are?
Exactly.
Here?
They're prohibited from, like, oh, not prohibited, they're unable to move on anything that, what was it, that doesn't conduct static electricity.
That's right. But they do address that, but the explanation is, oh, this is like an invasion force, so they've got extra special stuff.
They've got like a little Tron disc on the back.
They've got an extra little saucer on their back, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
But you'd think that in a million years, they might have incorporated that into their civilization, seeing as they're so limited in movement. Like, a million years in the future, they can be beaten with a cloak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By a bunch of, like, petrified forest people.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Daleks have two more prisoners, and one of them tries to escape. And they don't want to get back into the filthy mines, he says, or something like that.
Yeah.
Like the guy who escapes, or tries to escape. Which suggests a lengthy invasion at this point, conquering the apples.
Yeah.
And, you know, boom, kablamo, he's killed.
Yeah, we get our first Dalek murder.
Yeah.
No, there were murders in episode two, weren't they? This is our first Dalek human murder.
Oh, that's true.
Because before they only killed Tharls. Yeah. It's fine.
Very true.
But yeah,
we're fine.
We get that little shot that will go on for years and years and years of how Daleks kill people. And it's basically lots of exposure, no exposure. Which is really effective, actually. I think it's really effective.
It drives the story.
It's like otherworldly. It's like they are dying in an otherworldly way.
Yeah. Anyway, so that dude is killed, and Doc and Ian...
Oh, God, shit, yeah. Better get inside the ship.
Exactly. Along with the other prisoner, who essentially just introduces himself as, like, a slayer of robo-dudes. He says, like, yeah, he's here because he killed some robo-dudes.
Well, if this has been going on 6 months, and these people have survived plagues, etc., etc., they probably are the tough nuts that are left. So they probably are only robo-slayers left.
So, Doc, Ian, and Toughnuts, they bought the saucer. By the way, another new thing. We saw a white Dalek before. This now, by the saucer, is the first instance of a Dalek commander who has different markings.
Right, yeah.
He's, like, black and has some white details on him or something like that. By the way, are you thinking what I'm thinking? I'm thinking Blitz, London Blitz, and Nazi invasion. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
Very much so. I mean, it is... Okay, it's 1964. It's a little bit closer to the Blitz.
Do you know what, though? A little segue.
Yeah,
I was talking to my mum earlier, who was an early Doctor Who fan.
Yeah.
And she... And, like, I was talking to her about this episode, and she was saying, like, the biggest thing about the Daleks, she doesn't actually like modern Daleks that much. She doesn't find them that frightening.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Because they're just nowhere near as menacing as these Daleks.
Ah.
These Daleks are much badder.
Oh, they're
much badder.
They're actually like they're cruel,
yeah.
Is what they are. Like,
yeah.
Whereas the modern Daleks, like, they're evil,
like,
and they're efficient. But these ones are just plain cruel.
And because I guess they're quite new, they're like an unstoppable force. You don't know that they are stoppable.
Yeah.
Whereas every time you see the Daleks in modern Doctor Who, it's kind of like, well, the Doctor's always dealt with it before.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to deal with it again. Like,
yeah.
They're
exactly.
They're the old foe who the Doctor always wins against.
Yeah.
More or less, always wins against.
No, that's true. The same goes for Cybermen.
So right now, the Daleks are more terrifying than they are in present day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's a very good point.
Anyway.
Okay.
So at that point, we cut back to Barbara and Susan. And what's his name? Gorilla Dave? Is telling Susan not to tell Barb that Ian and Doc have been captured.
Yeah, but somehow Blondie finds out, and she explains that the robo-dudes, they're turned into... Well, like, people are turned into robo-dudes mm-hmm. inside the saucer, and once you're on a saucer, there is no hope.
Yeah.
You are totally boned.
Yeah. So that must be quite upsetting for Susan, because she knows, like, Ian and the Doctor are inside the saucer.
Yeah, exactly.
But Barb hasn't given up hope.
Yeah, so then cut back to the saucer, where Doc, Ian and Toughnuts are brought into... They're, like, placed in a cell.
Yeah. Oh, and we... And the beginning of another trope, where the Doctor says... Like, they're going up in the lift, essentially. They're not even inside the ship. And he goes, this is a work of genius.
Oh, really?
The Doctor, even though he's in a really perilous situation, even though everything's going wrong around him, he still has time to stop and say, this is a work of genius.
Yeah, he admires the intelligence behind it.
Exactly. Which, you know...
That's true. That is actually a Doctor
thing. He has been curious before, in previous episodes, but this is the first time I feel he's been in real danger. It looks as though he's going to die, even. Like, he's been taken up inside a spaceship. And he's still... intrigued.
Yeah, on the other hand, like, how many occasions so far has he actually had an opportunity to be impressed by technology?
He was impressed by the Daleks the first time he saw them.
Was he?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. No, he was impressed by the highly civilized society on Marinus.
Yeah.
And
the French Revolution. He was really impressed by the French Revolution.
Like, but there was no, like, there was no technology.
Yeah, it wasn't, like, technologically beautiful.
No, it was more like he's just admiring the culture itself.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Doesn't matter. They're put in a cell, and we see some Dalek CCTV footage. And the Daleks, they've basically made a note of Doc's above-average intelligence.
Mm.
And they decide to administer a test of some description.
Yeah. I didn't pick up on this, actually. I'll be honest. You picked up on this.
Okay.
It does make total sense.
We'll get
to it. The Doctor and Ian are inside a cell with this guy called Jack Craddock.
Jack Craddock. My note is...
He is one of the thickest people you've ever come across.
Yeah.
But they've obviously made him really thick so you can get the juxtaposition of him against the Doctor.
My note, there's now a Jack. We have now both appeared on the show.
I'm so happy that my my guy is, like, the worst character.
Dude, my guy, Leon, in the French Revolution, turned out to be a total turncoat.
No, yeah.
He was a fucking traitor.
Rather be
an idiot than a traitor.
As Barb...
Actually, no, I take that back. I'd much rather be a traitor than an idiot.
As Barb explained at the time, like, no one's in the wrong, no one's in the right. You can't really say Leon was bad. All Leon was sexy. Like, he was sexy and clever.
Or Leon is sexy. Anyway.
Okay, fine. My guy is thick and ugly.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Okay, so then that's when he says, he presumes that they've been taken, that they've been on a lunar base for the past decade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that they managed to actually get the exposition out of Jack as to what's happened.
Exactly, which is so weird because what, like, are there no moon phones?
Well, I don't know. Like, what are they...
A telescope?
What do they do?
Would they not have noticed a fucking flying saucer fleet travelling to the Earth past the freaking moon?
Like, when you think about the future, do mm-hmm. you think of people living on the moon? Because it seems to me a bit of a pointless exercise.
Yeah,
there's not very much to do on the moon.
No, that's true.
You can't really mine for anything. Oh, I don't know what's under the surface.
You can have
an
observatory of some sort.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you wouldn't think that there'd be large-scale industrial stuff going on.
That's true. Like, there's no point in going to the moon anymore, but we're going to Mars. That's great.
Yeah,
tangent
that's
over.
Cool.
Let's continue.
Yeah. but Jack tells us, first of all, there was a meteor storm.
Yeah, approximately 10 years ago.
Yeah. Was it 10 years
ago? Yeah, he says there was a meteorite plague about 10 years ago.
No, there was a meteorite storm, like a long meteorite storm, then a plague.
Yeah, which lasted for 6 months until the sources arrived.
I took the plague to be like a disease plague, not a plague of meteors.
Oh, no. Sorry, what I mean is there were meteors, after which there was a plague.
Yeah,
clearly
yes.
The meteors were part of this.
And then the Daleks swept in.
Yeah.
So it was all planned. They were just hovering above, waiting for Earth to be really weak so they could come in.
Exactly, which is fantastically clever, and also actually quite modern in terms of science. Sci-fi, right?
Yeah.
But that does also contextualize this now.
Tom Cruise film? War of the Worlds?
Yeah, exactly. Or whatever. Yeah, exactly. They were, like, under the ground. Yeah,
biding their time. Yeah.
Precisely. But yeah, so that means it's been going on for 10 years, and all he knows is that the Daleks want something that is under the ground, and all of Bedfordshire is now a gigantic mining area. Of the entire surface of the Earth.
Yeah, Bedfordshire is the best route. Down to the middle.
So then Doc's found something. Cut to the Daleks offer one last chance on the radio. Yeah. And the tagline of this transmission is, Daleks offer life.
Yeah.
And back at Rene's Cafe, Professor X, he's giving a speech.
Well, it's more than that. Like, if you don't give up, rebels, we're going to destroy all of London anyway.
Mm.
So there'll be no London left to inhabit.
Yeah, which is really... is that not also a little bit silly? It's been going on for 10 years. Right now is when they decide, you know what, we've had enough. This is the Dalek way of doing things. This is the, we've had a war with the Thals for 500 years, okay, but we can't wait 24 hours to build for something to be finished or whatever.
Well, you know...
This is the same thing.
But it's often the case, even in modern Doctor Who, the Doctor turns up just at the right moment.
No, so that is true.
He turns up just as they're just creeping over the edge. They've been mining for ages, and they've just made it to where they want to be.
Yeah, but my point is...
And they're about to do the plan.
Yeah, but my point is that after 10 years, since London is of no consequence to their plan, they could just fucking flatten it. They would have flattened it after, like, a year.
Yeah, there is no reason.
And just stayed in Bedfordshire. Right? That makes fucking sense.
Yeah, or maybe they couldn't get their heliport anywhere but Chelsea. Who knows?
Yeah. Okay, anyway, so we are at Rene's Cafe. Professor X is giving, like, a speech about attacking the heliport.
Yep.
And Bob has an idea. She gets up.
Subterfuge.
She picks up some of the Robo-Dude headgear and says that they could use it as camouflage to, like, infiltrate the heliport.
That's another thing I noticed in this episode. Barb comes up with a lot of good ideas in this episode.
She does, yeah.
Yeah.
She's
leading this show. Like, every clever little plan that comes up, even ones that don't work, seem to be Barb's.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, you know what? You're right. You're totally right. At least when she's part of the faction. When we have the whole splitting up of factions, whichever faction she's a part of, she is the leader of.
Yeah.
But, and it doesn't matter if it's Dave or Gorilla, whatever his name is, Tyler Durden, or whoever, or Blondie. Yeah.
And with good reason. She wins them over with the power of her argument. That's a really good idea.
And the hair. Hair grows exponentially throughout the story arc.
I say it's a really good idea. It's amazing they haven't thought of this idea before.
Like, yeah.
It is just absurd.
Yeah. Anyway.
So back to Doc, Ian and Craddock.
Well, they're going to attack the saucer, is what they say.
Yeah, they're going to attack the saucer.
They're going to attack the saucer, and they haven't, but this is really weird. They say they're going to attack the saucer in 1 hour. What? So they haven't briefed anyone. They haven't armed themselves.
They've got one bomb.
Yeah, one might assume it'll take a while to get to the heliport.
All this bomb does is leak acid. That's all it does. It's one tiny little bomb that leaks acid.
Professor X,
it's basically a big battery.
Yeah, Professor X does not deserve to lead this resistance.
No.
So, anyway, cut back to the cell. Doc, Ian, and Toughnuts, they're tinkering with what I assume is the test. Now, I'm not sure about this.
Yeah.
I assume this is the test.
I didn't pick up on this first time around, but I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
So they found a device of some sort that's magnetized.
Yeah, and Doc reckons this is like the key out of there, and we get some of the worst math babble ever.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
Shall we soundbite that?
Yeah.
Soundbite.
Now, X equals gamma. Now, that means roughly 2.5%. So that should give us a curve of round about 80 degrees.
Very good, Doc. Yeah. I just learned something.
That makes total sense, Doc. Thank you. Yeah, my note is Doc spouts some scientific nonsense about how it works.
So they get the magnet inside.
But the Doctor explains that he thinks that device is in there in case a Dalek gets trapped inside that room.
Yeah.
It's something that only a Dalek could really work out.
How?
Well, because they know the answer, I guess.
Yeah, with magnets? Whatever. Okay, it doesn't matter. Yeah,
whatever.
Right.
It makes total sense. The soundbite explained everything, dude.
Oh, you're right. Actually, you know what? Yeah, no, you're totally right.
And we get quite an extended back and forth of the Doctor with Craddock, where the Doctor essentially tells Craddock he's a lump of shit. He says something about, you know, if your wit was all the Daleks had to compete against, they'd have won a long time ago.
Which is a fair observation.
Well, to be fair, Craddock, he's a total dipshit. He is the stupidest person ever. Like, everything the Doctor suggests, and he's coming up with some quite good plans, Craddock's just like, no, that's never going to work.
Whatever happens is we're just going to get caught by the Daleks.
You're just going to get caught. Go away.
You know what? Turns out he is actually kind of right, because...
Well, he is kind of right.
They managed to open up the door, and they're met by, like, a a whole troop of Daleks.
But before that, we get a little ego stroke again. I love the Doctor's little ego strokes. They really pick me up. So Ian says to the Doctor when he opens the door, "You're a genius." To which the Doctor responds, "Yes, there are very few of us left."
I missed that.
In
very
all
good.
Of time and space.
I totally missed that.
But they're caught immediately.
Yeah, and because, I reckon because he's basically solved the test. Like, he solved the Rubik's Cube that the Daleks left in there.
They watched him do it.
Yeah, so now he is going to be robotized, which is where my notice, getting Cyberman feelings here.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, cut to the worst attack ever.
With the battery, yeah.
They throw some of the bombs, like the new bombs, and they were meant to shatter Daleks. That's what we learned before. These new bombs that Professor X has invented, they will shatter the Dalek.
But they surely don't shatter Daleks, because they're just acid bombs.
Okay, so fine. They
should melt Daleks.
They will get through the Dalek armor. Yeah.
This bomb will shatter the casing of the Daleks.
But it still, they are the worst bombs ever. This is the worst attack ever. However, regardless, they manage to infiltrate the saucer while the Doc is about to be robodutified.
Yeah, because, well, we should mention that they go to robodutize the Doctor first, because he's the intelligent one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so he's been anaesthetized, he's actually been knocked out, and he's about to be operated on by a Roboman.
Yeah.
On the instruction of Dalek 347.
And this is the cliffhanger, end of episode 2.
End of episode 2, yeah.
Time for episode 3, Day of Reckoning. By the way, episode names, so much better than they've ever been. I mean, seriously, we've got Day of Reckoning, we've got Flashpoint.
I don't know.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know how you feel, but like all throughout all these early Doctor Who's, I feel that the titles bear very little relation to what happens in the episode.
The ordeal springs to mind.
It is the Day of Reckoning. It is. But so is episode 4. So is episode 5. So is episode 6.
Exactly like the Prisoners of the Conciergerie.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway. That should have been the name of the entire thing. It shouldn't have been Reign of Terror. It should have been Prisoners of the... Yeah. Different episode.
So episode 3, the rebels are inside the ship, and they stop the Roboman and save the Doc.
Yeah, wait, we've got a soundbite coming up as well. 50 minutes in, I made a note, Susie shouts, "Shut up, Jenny."
Where?
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all.
Soundbite.
Shut up, Jenny!
Which is fantastic! Yeah. Finally!
Well, she's coming out of her shell.
Yeah, were you allowed to
say... transforming into a woman.
I may have misheard that, in which case I apologise, ladies and gentlemen. But like, if she actually said, "Shut up, Jenny," then...
I didn't hear it.
I didn't even know that was allowed to be said on the air.
Especially from a girl to a woman.
Yeah, in 1964.
But all of this, all of these little, these boisterous moments from Susan, I took to be, given what we know at the end of the episode, spoiler alert, she is transforming a bit. Like, she is becoming more independent. She is becoming more of a woman.
Yeah, yeah. No, very true. So, Kablamatron, Susie's with Jenny, "Shut up, Jenny." Jenny, by the way, is wearing a balaclava. Badly. For no reason whatsoever. The bombs prove to be complete pants. Professor X, it's the worst rescue ever. But the Doc is rescued.
Yeah.
And then promptly lost.
I actually enjoyed the little fight scene the Rebs had with the Daleks. So they actually, you know, pick Daleks up, put them on one side, wrestle them to the floor.
Yeah, isn't there a shot where like a Dalek is wrestled to the floor but falls onto one of the Resistance members?
Yeah.
However, in the process, pretty much everyone is killed. Mm. Right? I think that's my note here.
Yeah.
All of the rebels except Tyler Durden and Blondie were killed or captured.
Yeah. So and a lot of death goes on. A lot of Daleks die, but like obviously because there are less rebels.
Yeah.
A lot of them die.
Ian is still on board the saucer.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say this is another... Oh, my God. I've got a fantastic piece of trivia later on. But this is another case of William Hartnell goes on holiday. Because he is away now for quite a while.
I haven't considered that.
And I'm not going to spoil anything, but the freaking trivia I've got lined up for you, mister, is going to blow your mind hole so wide open. This whole serial is going to make love to your brain.
I cannot wait.
Yeah, you can't. Okay, so there's one other survivor. in, like, the encampment in Renee's cafe, mm-hmm. whose audition for this this part must have consisted of him cowering on the floor like a limp hamster.
Oh, yeah!
Because
I saw that.
Full extent of what he does.
Basically, everyone's dead, except that guy.
How did he survive? He has no qualities as a resistance fighter.
Do you reckon that was a stagehand who wasn't meant to be in shot, and the reason he was cowering is because he was trying to stay out of the camera shot? Like, that did occur to me when I saw him. I was like, who the fuck is this dude? Everyone is meant to have gone except for Dortmund because he's in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Except for this cowering guy.
He's fantastic. That might be another screenshot for the website.
Yeah, great.
So then...
So we find out that Doc didn't make it back to the camp.
Exactly.
He got lost along the way, but he did get out of the ship.
Yeah, he is somewhere. Wasn't he, like, carried off by Tyler Durden or something?
He was, but Tyler Durden turns up back at the encampment and says...
Oh, he lost him.
I lost the Doctor.
Yeah, you're right. No, you're totally right. Then cut back to the Daleks, where the Supreme Commander is giving orders to destroy London.
But at that point, the rebels do say, we're going to go to the Civic Transport Museum.
Yeah.
Because apparently that's where it's at. Like, yeah. That is the central focal point of the resistance.
Yeah. But on the saucer, we get a shot of Ian Han soloing under the floor panels.
Uh-huh.
And he bumps into Craddock.
Yeah.
Together they disable a robo dude.
No.
Pretty sure they do, dude.
No.
Do they not?
No. So what actually happens? So we cut to Ian underneath the floor panel.
Yeah.
Ian bumps into Craddock, who's been robotized.
What?
Yeah, Craddock has been robotized and is attacking
a different dude.
Yes,
it's a different dude.
That's
shit,
right.
Man.
It's a different dude.
Oh, you're totally right.
And
yeah.
Ian and the different dude wrestle Craddock to the floor.
Yeah.
And,
incapacitated. We find out his
name. We will find out his name.
It's Jerry or something? Larry.
Larry.
It's actually Larry. So Ian and Leisure Suit Larry, they go back down under the floor panels.
Yeah, and hide again.
And meanwhile, Susie...
Oh, not before dumping poor Craddock's body down a disposal chute.
Which is awesome. Yeah. And then,
Ian kills so many people.
What is
his death count now? It must be like 50.
He's probably rivaling Rambo and the dude from Topper Harley.
Oh, he's gone well beyond Rambo First Blood. Like, he's into Rambo 3.
He's into Topper Harley. Yeah. So, okay, doesn't matter. Dude, Kablamatron, Susie and Gorilla Dave, they evade capture behind some, like, non-Dalek accessible stairs,
mm-hmm.
hide in the bushes.
Which are most stairs, to be fair.
Yeah. And at this point, my note is these two are clearly going to get it on.
Yeah.
Like, there is immediate chemistry between those two.
Yeah.
Also, he is clearly presented as the attractive one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tyler Durden is, like, the rough one, the guy who's, like, he's got the 1,000-mile stare or the 1,000-yard stare. He's, like, the survivor guy.
Yeah, you know he's going to make it.
Professor X is the wise old man, even though all of his plans are pants.
Never revisited.
Gorilla Dave is the attractive one. But then, all of a sudden...
And Susan, at that point, offers David passage on the TARDIS. Says, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Come on the TARDIS with us and let's go away. He won't go because he says, I've got a job to do.
Yeah, like, this time needs me or something.
Yeah, this is my home and I'm going to defend it.
Yeah, exactly. Which suggests that
only tough nuts left.
Exactly, which suggests that he now knows all about them. Like, that's exactly the note I've made.
Oh, yeah, if she says that, he must know that they're time travellers.
Exactly,
yeah.
Which is so weird. When was he told and what was his reaction?
And he passes no comment on it whatsoever, other than, I don't want to do that.
I'm still flummoxed by the fact that no one who finds out that they're time travellers doesn't try to use time travel to their advantage.
Yeah.
I'm flummoxed by that. Doesn't matter. A dude named Baker arrives with the Doctor.
In that situation, your first reaction would be, hey, can we go back like an hour before the Daleks first invaded and try and take them down?
Exactly. Let's go back and warn people or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no one does that. So then this dude Baker arrives with the Doctor.
Sorry to interrupt.
Okay, go for it.
Susan also gives a very poignant soliloquy about how she's never felt at home anywhere.
That's true.
She's never felt settled. Nothing,
setting more of the tone.
Any good, setting more tone. And David says to her, yeah, I think you kind of need to settle down.
Yeah.
Like,
he's got a little glint in his eyes. Like, hey. He's already spotted her... Her cracking ass.
Oh, for God's sake, stop going on about her ass. It's not a focal point in any way.
It is, dude. It doesn't matter. It's a perfectly valid point. She was much older than 16 when shooting this.
Yes. Okay. That's true.
So, doesn't matter. I need to stop saying doesn't matter. Baker arrives with the Doctor. leaves the Doctor with Susie and Gorilla Dave, and then says that he was going to head to the Cornish coast.
Yeah.
And then is promptly blasted to smithereens by Daleks.
Yeah.
Cut to the bridge, that famous, famous shot of Daleks basically in London.
It's a great scene, actually.
What's the bridge called? Which bridge is it?
It's London Bridge, isn't it?
Is it London Bridge?
I thought it was London Bridge.
The one that goes from Buckingham Palace? No, it is.
I've walked across that bridge many a time.
Me too.
But I'm not sure which bridge it is.
Yeah.
But I've walked up those steps many, many times.
Yeah. It is steps. How did Daleks get on that bridge?
Okay. It hasn't,
you can get on the bridge on one side, but you can't actually traverse it.
These days, there's actually a ramp. It's wheelchair accessible, but I don't know if
it was Dalek accessible at back in the
60s. Although, in 2164, it would have been wheelchair accessible, because today's ramp would still be there, if you think about it. So the Dalek got up the wheelchair accessible ramp.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful shot. It's the seminal shot of Dalek invasion of Earth.
Yeah, and it's a commentary on how big Doctor Who's got, because they've emptied all of central London.
Actually, I saw a little bit about, you know, the documentary that they're, not documentary, like the biopic type film that they're doing right now in time for the anniversary?
Yeah.
Where we get to see, like, the actual...
The old Doctor.
Yeah, quote-unquote, the recording of this very same story arc. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, like, there were interviews with the production team, and they were saying they're doing it, actually, guerrilla style, that was the term used. Very much like in the original recording, that they essentially left without a permit to go downtown at the break of dawn. So really? There was enough light, but the people weren't awake yet.
They didn't block off any roads or anything?
According to that one interview that I saw, they didn't.
Interesting.
It's pretty cool.
But what did make me feel a bit strange? It's a great scene. I mean, we get those drums again. There's this great pace to it. But they are running straight up the middle of the road at all times. And we have been told many a time by the Daleks, okay, you want to get caught? The best thing to do is go out into the middle of the road.
Yeah.
But so that's what they do. They run down the middle of the road.
To quote Ian, why do they do it?
Why do they do what?
Why do they do it?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Why did they do that?
Yeah, it's Bob and Blondie. They're, like, pushing the wheelchair.
Yeah, really fast. Yeah. We get a nice little tour of London.
We get lots of London. Square. London correct moments, yeah.
Monuments.
Monuments. Those are the exact two examples I've written. Yeah. Literally the same two examples I've written.
Standout moments. Yeah.
And all of which are occupied by Daleks.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. Like, every stuff is boarded up. There are lots of veto signs.
It must have been so hard to shoot.
And then they arrive at... It wasn't the department store, was it? It was the Museum of...
The Museum for Civic Transport, whatever it was. they make it. And Dortmund is saying he's got a new formula for the bomb. But he wants to show it to the Doctor. So he's never met the Doctor, but he wants to show it to another man of science.
Yeah. And we get a new technical term. He says that the bombs didn't work because of the Dalek's outer casing, which is made out of Dalekanium.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Well, no, that's fine. That's fine. They've never seen this metal before.
No, this is not fine, my friend. This is not fine because the whole... If he knew that they were made out of quote-unquote Dalekanium, and he said he has developed a bomb that... It is revolutionary in that it can penetrate the outer casing, then surely doing so is the whole point of the bomb in the first place. And saying, like, oh, the problem with my bomb was that it didn't blow up, but that's really the only flaw. Like, fuck you, Professor X, your bombs are shit. Okay.
At least he's making a bomb.
His bombs and he himself are of literally no consequence to anyone in this entire story. I hate Professor X.
But he's got spirit.
He has got spirit.
His whole point is we just need one victory, one little victory, and the whole of Europe will rise up, you know.
Yeah, that's true. But that's it. It's okay, he wins a bit of a moral victory, but okay, it doesn't matter. I've got to stop saying doesn't matter.
He wins another moral victory.
Oh, it's so ridiculous. Another...
Oh, it's noble.
Oh, I hate it.
It's noble.
I hate it. He leaves the notes on the table.
Yep.
Pops outside to, like, Django the Dalek single-handedly.
it's a suicide mission. It's not a Django moment. It's an actual suicide mission.
Yeah, it is. He throws a bomb, right?
Yeah, he throws the bomb. That was quite funny. So he allows himself to die, throws the bomb.
That allegedly blows up.
It does explode. Like, you see it fizzing and stuff. It does nothing.
I hear it exploding, but I don't see anything.
Do the Daleks die?
No. What? They totally survive. The bomb is shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Professor X does not deserve to lead this fucking revolution. Well, Professor X should not be in Renee's cafe.
Well, he's not leading it anymore.
Oh, God. Yeah, exactly. He dies for no reason whatsoever. Like, possibly you could argue, all right, so he...
There was a concern.
Being in a wheelchair, he's slowing them down.
Exactly. And he does, like, make allusions to that.
Yeah. But I'm going to break character and say... I'm going to say two things. Number one, they are in a freaking transport museum and are about to hotwire a truck, yeah? Mm-hmm. They can just put him in that truck.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
And number two, the whole point of like, okay, I'm going to go out and kamikaze myself, in that way, in that sense, like winning time for the girls, mm-hmm. wins no time at all. In fact, it just draws the Daleks out. A second later, the Daleks come into the museum and don't see Barbara or Balaclava because they're like hiding behind the truck, and that's literally it. That is literally it. He wins nothing. They survive solely because the Daleks don't think about like maybe looking on the other side of a truck. That's it.
I do take your point.
Fuck you, Professor X.
He had good intentions.
Yeah.
Don't speak ill of the dead.
No, I won't. It is a very nice shot of him approaching the camera, though, before he kamikazes. Mm-hmm. Like, he puts the notes on the table and then, like, slowly wheels himself closer to the camera.
Mm.
And then, like, just turns 90 degrees, heads, like, exits stage right. And it is actually, it looks modern.
Yeah. You know,
like, it looks very nice.
I didn't
Jesus
have
Christ, I'm so upset by this, man.
I didn't have as big a problem with it as you did.
His
as
bombs I really said. Are the worst. Okay.
They are shit bombs, I'll give you that. So, cut to the Doctor and Susan. The Doctor wants to go back to the TARDIS, but Susan doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and she actually seems to win the Doctor over.
Kind, yeah, exactly.
I thought that there was some little plan going on in the Doctor's head, because the Doctor's saying to Susan, yeah, we got to go back, let's leave. Susan's saying, no, we need to listen to David, and, you know.
I reckon this is help. The Doctor seeing that there's, like, a kindling of love there.
Yeah, maybe.
And he wants to stimulate
maybe
that.
This is the first time the Doctor's kind of thinking, actually, Susan and this guy are made to be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He just wants to asthmatically exhale on the tiny little embers of love between them.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. But it is really weird, because he wants to leave. Susie goes, no, I'm going to stay. And then sorry, I know you said this, but I'm going to add one thing to it. He passes it off as his own idea.
Yes.
He then says, oh, I have got an idea, let's head north.
Well, because David comes to him and says, Doctor, you're the senior member of the group, like, pays for his
job. Yes! Very good observation, yeah.
And then says, you know, what should we do? And the Doctor says, yeah, let's head north. Which was actually David's idea in the first place, which he passed to Susan, and then Susan passed back to the Doctor.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I see. Yeah.
So then cut to the saucer where Leisure Suit Larry is telling Ian that his brother Phil told him that the Daleks are after the Earth's magnetic core. So it must be true.
Yeah.
And then the saucer lands.
Yeah.
They Han Solo back out.
And then we see the Robo-Man approaching the area where Doc, Susan and David are. They don't go up to the Doctor, Susan and David. Instead, they leave a bomb on the ground just round the corner.
And what does this bomb look like?
A toolbox?
To me, it looked like a piece of luggage so large that Ryanair would make you check it in. Like, it is huge and it's got a little timer on it.
Yeah.
And new...
Which, actually, that reminded me of the top of a barbecue.
Yes!
You know, in the middle, like it's got the little gauge, it looked like the top of a barbecue.
Totally.
Yeah.
And we've got another piece of, like, modern film. It's very possible. We've got another form of, like, modern, well, quote-unquote, modern filmmaking, in that every time that it ticks, the camera zooms in on it. So, like, zooms every second. So,
thought that was quite budget.
Yeah,
like,
but
it doesn't do it in a very controlled way.
No, it doesn't. I mean, it's clearly manual or whatever, but it's still new.
Well,
we haven't seen that on the show yet.
It seemed to me like they'd forgotten their tripod.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, that's the end of episode 3. End of Tomorrow is the next one, and it starts with a piece of trivia. You, if you haven't read this, dude, you are literally going to have a braingasm.
Stop telling me about it. Well, no. Stop building it up and tell me about it.
Okay, so episode 4 starts off with the Doctor essentially just fainting. Like, he stands up and then he faints.
Yeah.
Here's a piece of trivia for you, Flaphammer! Okay, do you remember in the Keys of Marinus, there was one segment which was, like, with... I can't remember his name, but there was, like, an old monk. He was... It was the house, the cabin, that gets almost invaded by plants.
Do you remember in the Screaming Forest? Oh, yeah.
That old guy...
The scientist, botanist, or whatever.
Exactly. That guy also was William Hartnell's body double. And the guy that we see faint is not William Hartnell. It is the dude from the cabin in Keys of Marinus.
Ah.
William Hartnell is on holiday.
That is very good trivia.
That's pretty good trivia.
Excellent trivia.
Thank you very much.
Speaking of body doubles. So, yeah. I didn't mention it at the time. At the start of this episode, remember when Ian nearly falls down? So he nearly falls out of the building where they're looking at Battersea from?
Yeah.
Freeze frame there. It is so not Ian.
Oh, is it not?
Yeah, it is so not Ian. He's a very ugly, older gentleman.
Nice.
Who's just dressed up in a suit. They haven't actually made very much effort at all to get him to look like Ian. He's just in a suit. But
I've got to rewatch that.
Again, small TV screen, everything compressed. You wouldn't have been able to.
Yeah, ditto watching this on an iPhone on the tube, which is regrettably what I did this time.
I watched it on like a 17-inch
plasma.
LED. No, I didn't watch it on my telly. I watched it on my laptop.
Okay, that's good.
But there you go. Good trivia. Good stuff.
Thank you. I thought you might like that.
Episode 4, The End of Tomorrow. So David and Susan have noticed the firebomb.
Yeah.
And David seems to have seen something like this before. The doc, as you say, has passed out. And David pours acid on top of the bomb.
Yeah, from like one of the grenade-type thingies.
Yeah, that Dusseldorf made. Yeah. So it did come in handy.
It did. Thought finally.
Did a good job.
Yeah, but it only because it
made
such a... Like,
in a roundabout way, he did a good job.
It is actually a really, really cool scene where they disarm the bomb.
Yeah.
Like, they pour the acid on top. I don't know what they use, but you even get... It's clearly shot somewhere else, but you get the shot of the bomb from above.
Yeah.
Dissolving.
Yeah.
Like, the casing is dissolving. He, like, pops his hand in there. Does something like they pull the timer out, I think.
Yeah, pulls the timer out.
Looks really, really cool.
Yeah, so really, it's a really good dismantling.
Yeah.
And then David suggests to Susan that they must leave the doctor behind.
Yeah, which it makes no strategic sense, but is clearly just because Hartnell is on holiday. Or potentially, like, who knows, maybe he had to go to hospital. We don't know at this point, but either way, he is not available for the shoot. And thus, we need to now rewrite the story in order to accommodate this.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't just have shots of him from behind. By the way, the old dude in the cabin doesn't look that much like William Hartnell.
Although, it does give an opportunity, which is important to the plot, for David and Susan to have some alone time.
Yeah, I feel like maybe narratively you could have conjured that up differently.
Okay, you could have gotten rid of the Doctor in a different way, it's true.
You know what? The Doctor could even have just told them, listen, I'm going to go over there to do whatever, and you two continue in that
direction. And it's not particularly well executed the way he passes out, because he passes out when he hears about the bomb, which kind of makes, like, so when they first notice the bomb, David goes, oh shit, there's a bomb over there, and then the Doctor faints. It's kind of like, what a pussy. He's heard about a bomb and it's made him faint.
Is that it? I know
he was in a bad way, like, that isn't how it was intended.
Well, he was still under the effects of the anaesthetics.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, so they leave the dog behind. Then we get a glimpse of Bob and the unreasonably bitchy blondie, aka Balaclava, inflating truck wheels with a foot pump.
Yeah.
And they're going to take it to Bedfordshire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then cut back to...
It's all going on in Bedfordshire.
Shit, yes it is.
So cut to Ian and Larry.
Yeah, Leisure Suit Larry.
They're in Bedford, and they're having a little look around.
Yeah. And they're intercepted by this really kind bloke from the West Country.
Yeah. Who looks exact... Well, not exactly, but a little bit like Brendan Gleeson.
That is such a nice observation.
Henceforth, Brendan.
Brendan.
Yeah. I can't remember the guy's name. I wrote it down somewhere. I don't care.
I refer to him as Mr. Wensleydale.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, just because...
What are the ears?
Well, actually, no, I was thinking mainly of the cheese.
No, Wallace and Gromit, right?
No, I don't know about that.
He looks like Wallace. Is it Wallace? Which one's the dog? I don't know. The one that's the guy who likes Wensleydale.
Oh, really? Yeah.
He's got the little pointy out ears. Yeah, whatever.
Okay, I was referring to the cheese because he's from the West Country.
Oh, okay. Interesting, really. Made that overlap.
Then a robot dude arrives.
Yes.
And they sort of comply when the robot dude goes like, yeah, you have got... Oh, wait, hang on.
They haven't got very much choice.
Do we not see the slaves?
Yeah, we see loads of people being enslaved. They're wandering down a railroad track kind of thing.
Yeah.
They don't actually... They've not been robotized, these people.
No.
They're just slaves.
They're just slaves, yeah. Which kind...
They're being herded around by robomen.
Would it not be safer to just robotize everyone?
Yeah, you think so.
Yeah. For the Daleks.
Maybe it's costly for the Daleks.
Maybe it is.
Maybe each operation, like, is quite costly.
Let's not underestimate the pecuniary elements of an invasion.
Exactly. War expenditure can get a bit high.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Who knows what's going on back in Skara?
Yeah. Anyway, Brendan Gleeson, he's there to meet, like, this black marketeer named Ashton. And he's going to meet up with Ian later. I don't know what my notes are here. But Ian says he wants to meet Ashton anyway.
Yeah.
Because he wants to get back to London.
Yeah.
Cut to Bob and Balaclava.
Well, no. There's more to that scene. So the Robo-Man actually strikes.
Oh, you're totally right.
Ian's really upset about this. They come back. Ian's openly defiant to the Robo-Man, yeah, and it literally blows the Robo-Man's mind.
You're right. Yeah.
It literally blows his mind.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, yeah, no, you're totally right.
I mean, he quite quickly turns around and tries to kill everyone. Of course, Ian bludgeons him in the back of the head, obviously, as Ian is so good at.
fuck reasoning.
But, like, he's
telling the application of violence.
What? He said no. He said,
I remember
to get
thing.
A new set of rules.
Yeah. I remember this bit. I remember thinking, oh, so this is how they're going to beat them. They're going to beat them by, like, with posing logic. Some sort of strange, like, some paradox.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be able to figure it out, mm-hmm, and then, like, short circuit.
Yeah.
No dice. No does dice. Not happen.
No. Very nice.
And they go into, like, a shed.
Yeah.
To meet Ashton, right? But, like, they jump into this shed. Then we cut back to Bob and Balaclava.
Yes.
I think so.
So they're discussing Dortmund's death.
Yeah.
Jenny thinks Dortmund was stupid, because she's a bitch. But Barb... and also says that Barb's too romantic about everything, and too sentimental.
She has a soft heart.
Yeah, well, Jenny has no heart.
That's true.
That's kind of what I took from this.
I think she's just completely cold. Like, she's rendered
she's
almost...
She's desensitized to everything.
That's the word I'm looking for.
She's almost a Cyberman.
Nice. Or a robo-dudas.
But yeah, just more exposition of how much of a bitch Jenny is.
Yeah, totally. They're also, like, wrapping up the prep of the most unwieldy-looking truck in Great Britain. and meanwhile...
Which,
like,
Susan drives. Which Barb drives like a maniac.
Yeah, women drivers. I think that's the sentiment that 1964 Doctor Who producers are trying to convey here. But anyway, so meanwhile, Susie and Gorilla Dave, they're like wandering through the sewers.
Yep, and we see that David has a gun.
Does he?
Yeah, David has a gun, and as soon as he shows us the gun, someone is holding a gun at them.
I thought Susie found, like, an empty bullet casing or something. She assumes the friends are near. This is my note, anyway. I'm sorry if I'm mistaken. She assumes that friends are near, and we suddenly find out from Dave that there are people who won't fight back, but who are, like, essentially willing to kill other humans to steal food.
Right.
So they're, like, these... Actually, we meet two such humans later on. The two ladies. The two crows in the cabin in the woods.
Yeah.
But, spoiler alert.
Well, as far as I had it, David had a gun. But as soon as we see David's gun, somebody's holding a gun at them.
Yeah. But we don't find out who it is.
We do, not yet.
Yeah, not yet.
But so we cut to Barb in the truck.
Kind of glamatron.
She's driving brilliantly. She does. It just shows how easy it is to kill a Dalek. She runs over like 20 of them in one go.
There's even like a fantastic. She runs over the Daleks. They're clearly empty, like two potters.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a fantastic miniature of the truck itself. Right? Because do they jump out of the truck? Remind me, what happens?
Well, what happens next? So they run over all those Daleks and they're like, oh, shit, we're in for it now. And sure enough, we cut to the Daleks and they're going, what the hell's going on down there?
send in 347.
Yeah, send in 347. So, like, get the saucer on them. So the saucer comes overhead, shoots the truck, and in one shot it explodes, and Barb and Jenny just about manage to jump out.
They jumped out of the moving truck?
Yeah, they jump out of the moving
Holy
truck.
Holy frack.
Barb is... She's becoming a superhero.
She's Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
That is beautiful.
Barb is the hero of this episode for me. I mean, Barb is just...
Totally.
Rocking my world.
So
then we see who has the gun. And, oh, it's just Tyler.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's Tyler Durden.
It's fine. I only keep this gun to, like, fend off the alligators. I've never used this.
Yeah, the alligators.
Human.
And he also says that the place is littered with scavengers.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not actually going to see any scavengers in the sewers. We do get to meet a doctor. An alligator, though. But first, he's going to take them to the doctor, because he knows exactly where he is, right?
And just a little bit more foreshadowing. Susan and David discuss how wonderful it would be to build the planet again from the start. Wouldn't that be an ideal situation?
Yeah, exactly. Susie goes, actually, hang on, what have I got? Like, yeah, Susie asks Gorilla Dave why Tyler Durden's so abrupt. And Gorilla Dave says, well, Tyler Durden has the 1,000-yard stare. But it's all right. Yeah, exactly. That's what you said. Like, they're going to rebuild it. And Susie then goes, and I quote, I want to have your babies, Gorilla Dave.
Can't say I remember that line. All right.
Kablamo. Back to Bob and Balaclava's traveling circus. And they reckon that they're somewhere, I've made a note, between Edgware and Stanmore.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I know those ends.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
And also made the point, I mean, that today is more or less London. I mean, that's,
Edgware is totally London.
Yeah, it's more, yeah, it's borderline.
Where does she to Stanmore?
But back in the, Stanmore's not that far from Edgware. It's on the Jubilee line.
Oh, really? It's on the Tube?
Yeah, it's on the Jubilee
line. Oh, my God. If you have an Oyster card, you can get to Stanmore.
That's right.
That's crazy.
There's a lovely golf course there. it's like the end of the Jubilee line, Stanmore. So it's more or less considered London. But back in the day, it would have been considered out of London. They're on their way to
exactly.
Auckland, which, you know, kind of shows...
Yeah, fair enough. How, I mean, they've been traveling for a while.
Yeah.
So then cut back to Ian and what's-his-face. Leisure Suit Larry.
Larry.
And they see some sort of man-sized beetle, a.k.a. Yeah. The Slither.
Yeah. Which is just like...
The Yeti of the story.
No, it's
worse. It's more or less a Yeti.
Well, it's worse. Like, why is there a... Like, did the Daleks bring this thing?
I was thinking that, like, as well. Did they bring it? Did they mutate something else? Well, is it like a Dalek henchman?
So, it's been like 200 years.
It cannot be a product of Earth evolution.
It cannot have evolved in 200 years. Where the fuck has this thing come from?
Yeah. It's very weird, but they pop into...
It's terrifying. Looking. It's actually a really good costume.
It is, with like the trembling hand.
Yeah.
Oh, it's creepy.
Disgusting, yeah.
Freaking creepy thing. I don't know if we ever actually get... We do see it. You're right.
And it's still good, even the full view.
It is good. But anyway, to avoid the Slither, they hop into the shed thingy where Ashton is pointing a gun at them. This is the theme.
Ashton is a bit of a twat.
Mm. Oh, he's a total.
He never redeems himself. He doesn't get the chance. But he pulls a gun on them and refuses to help them unless he gets payment of some kind. So gold crossing his palm.
Yeah, he says, Wensleydale pops up.
Yeah.
Brendan Gleeson
comes.
And essentially provides a character reference for them.
Yeah.
And
gives him some gold or something.
He buys food for jewels and gold, is my note.
Yeah.
And I've also said, my note is, what is this dude going to do with jewels? Also, have the human mining slaves been smuggling jewelry in the manner of Christopher Walken in Pulp Fiction?
Yeah.
Is that what they really... I carried this piece of metal in my ass for 10 years.
It's true. Why would jewels have any value anymore?
No value.
In a Dalek invasion, why would jewels have
in
value?
In fact, the food is what you want to hold on to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Things of practical benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Stanley Blade, you know, be worth a lot more than a diamond ring.
Exactly. So they're about to have dins, but we cut to Susie, Gorilla Dave, and Tyler Durden. They're in the sewers. We get a harrowing stunt sequence in which Susie nearly falls down a ladder into the alligator pit.
Yep.
And then Tyler Durden's found the Doctor.
Yeah. So actually, the Doctor wasn't missing for that long. He was only gone for an episode, which makes me think...
How much time is that in, like, you know, Earth time?
Well, I don't know what it is in actual shooting time, but it makes me think, as opposed to the Doctor's gone on holiday, the Doctor's actually just not feeling very well.
Oh, that is possible.
I think probably he's had to take time off because he's not feeling well, rather than he's gone to the Bahamas.
Oh, that's very possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, sure. No, my question was going to be, like, how long has it been within this context of the story? Has, like...
It's been just over an episode.
Yeah, but, yeah, for us. But, like, how much time has passed during this episode?
Oh, I see.
Is it, like, half a day?
About half a day. Not long.
Yeah.
Like, only the time it took for the saucer to get to Bedfordshire, which can't be very long, surely.
That's true.
A flight to Bedfordshire wouldn't take very long.
Especially if you're flying in a saucer that looks a little bit like an upside-down Jammy Dodger.
Exactly.
Totally.
Very fast, right?
Very fast.
So back to Ashton, Wells, and Ian, and one other dude.
They are eating enough food to feed at least 50 mining slaves.
Yeah. They're absolutely picking out. Although Brendan Gleeson does make the point, like, he puts a little bit aside for, like, others. He's like, that's got to feed 100.
Yeah, but exactly. That's going to feed 100. He puts aside, like, maybe 2 cans.
Yeah.
But they are all picking out on a can each.
Yeah.
They are literally, like, the fact that they're having a meal right now, that they're sitting down to have, like, a shed picnic, means the death of at least 50 slaves.
Yeah, but Ashton has no morals.
Ashton has no morals, but Brendan Gleeson has morals. Leisure Suit Larry has morals.
Leisure Suit Larry.
Totally. Ian has morals, for shit's sake.
Yeah. But while they're eating, the Slither attacks.
Oh, so
Ashton,
creepy.
Ashton shoots it, which does nothing to it.
Absolutely nothing. Yeah.
And then it eats Ashton.
Does it?
Yeah.
Oh, that is creepy. I didn't know that. Yeah, I thought it just killed him.
It eats Ashton.
Oh, that is awesome.
I rewinded it a few times because I wasn't quite sure what happened there, but yeah, he does.
Oh, that is so weird.
The other three make their escape.
The other two?
Three.
Oh, three. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Where does Brendan Gleeson go?
Larry, Gleeson, and Ian.
Yeah, but Brendan Gleeson Leeson runs like back to the
comes out the door.
Yeah, sure. They make it. But Brendan Gleeson goes back to the mines, whereas Ian and Leisure Larry, they're like backed up against a cliff.
Yeah.
And we get a literal cliffhanger again because they're at the cliff, they can't go any further, and that's where we get the full frontal nudity of the Slither.
Yeah.
It just pops up. Quivering.
Yeah.
Quivering for frontal nudity. And then, yeah, end of episode 4.
Episode 5, The Waking Ally.
Yeah. I've got a question for you, Flaphammer. Flaphammer?
Flaphammer, yeah.
Flap.
What's up?
Who is the Waking Ally?
I have absolutely no clue.
I have no idea.
No.
I don't think there is a Waking Ally.
Like, I don't know what that refers to. I honestly don't. Like, I might be being really dense, but no, I don't know who the Waking Ally is.
I don't think there is a Waking Ally. I made a note later on that is something to the effect of, oh, this must be the Waking Ally, and then later on going, oh, no, I guess not. I don't think there is an actual Waking Ally.
Who do they ally with?
You know what I suggest?
In this episode.
I suggest that we go through episode 5, and if we can find something.
Right. Keep the ally in mind.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, think about the Waking Ally. If you can think of who it is, then travel back in time and tweet me.
So, yeah, Ian and Larry get inside some sort of waste bucket.
Yeah.
Some sort of mechanical
thing. It's like a mining equipment type thing.
Yeah. And Ian, you know, surprise, surprise, bashes the Slither over the head to death.
Yeah.
As is his wont. And then we cut to the Daleks.
He bashes it over the head, like basically Snake Plissken's it, but then...
And then there's a sound effect of a dog dying.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the Slither falls down.
Yeah.
That's what it is, right? Like, he falls down. He doesn't kill him. It's the fall that kills him.
No. I think Ian kills it and then it falls off.
Oh, really?
Because there's a very distinct noise that goes on. Maybe you could soundbite this. Where it's like a dog dying. It's like...
I thought that was when it, like, hit the ground or something, when it fell down.
I have no idea. You might be right.
Doesn't matter. I have no idea.
But we cut to the Daleks. They're watching this whole thing. And they know that Ian is in the waste bucket.
Yeah. Wait, do they?
I thought so.
No. I think we get a cutscene of the Daleks lowering the waste bucket. It's the waste bucket in Shaft 9. And then we have a shot of Ian and what's his face? Larry. I can't remember. It's such an exotic name. saying that they're going down, but the bucket is clearly staying in place and it's just a shot of them crouching.
Don't poke fun.
So, cut back to the sewers. Hardnall's back.
Yeah, and the Robot Men are chasing the Doctor down into the sewers.
Yeah, exactly. Two Robo dudes. It's the worst fight ever.
We get a really nice shot of the Doctor bashing a Robo Man over the head. There's so much bashing over the head.
With a cane.
Yeah.
Was he carrying... I didn't know he had a cane. I don't remember the Doctor having a cane. I remember him having a cane to hurt a Robo dude.
He had a cane in... The Reign of Terror.
Oh, that's right. But that was part of his costume, wasn't
it? Yeah, but maybe he kept it.
Oh, maybe he did. I don't remember him having a cane this episode.
As we know, the TARDIS has a large wardrobe.
Yeah. Yeah. He can't get to the TARDIS!
That's true, and
I don't remember him having a cane when they were in the warehouse.
No.
When they were looking at Battersea. He didn't have a cane, dude. Where did the cane come from? Maybe it was a sewer cane. Yeah. It was just like a random sewer cane that the Doctor picked up.
Okay, let's just call it a stick.
Yeah.
Just for argument's sake. Let's just call it a stick.
Yeah. We also get a fantastic little line from the Doctor. Because one of the robo hombres is shot. And then Tyler Durden wants to shoot the other one, who's incapacitated. But the Doctor says, "No, Tyler Durden, I never take lives, only when my life depends on it."
But, as discussed, his life always depends on it. He's always in a perilous situation.
Well, there is that. And also, he has shown blatant disregard for human life in the past.
But he has always been under threat every time he has shown that blatant disregard.
I think there's a caveman.
Who
would disagree with
Cal. Cal was I wouldn't say he's a bastard, but he was very aggressive towards the Doctor.
Yeah, but Cal was also, like, bleeding to death on the ground, having been attacked by some animal. The production team didn't have a budget to put together.
The boot in.
Yeah, exactly.
Leave them on the floor. Yeah.
So, anyway, this is my note, by the way. You can tell me later on if this is going to turn out to be right. I don't think so. My guess here was that the robo dude that they spared was going to be the Waking Ally. I thought that robo dude was going to wake up.
That makes sense.
Because his helmet was a little bit wonky. So I figured, okay, oh, he's now going to regain his humanity, come back and, like, save the day.
Yeah.
No dice.
No. It is irreversible, as far as we know. This process is irreversible. We never see anyone reversed.
Except we have the very first person who shows up in episode one.
Oh yeah, killing himself.
Exactly. He, like, very clearly, knowingly, consciously pulls off his Frankel braces and, like, climbs into the water.
Yeah, what happened to that? There was this whole big thing about no humans near the river. What happened to that?
Oh yeah, nothing.
At the start. What? Why?
Yeah, nothing.
Why?
And also, if you assume that no humans are going to be near
really
the river...
They were really upset. The Daleks were really upset.
Wait, hang on. I've got a better question for you. Why was there a Dalek in the Thames?
Yeah. if there is nothing, yeah, nothing can get near the river. The Roadmen are constantly patrolling it. Why is he hiding under the water?
Yeah.
Taking a swim?
Probably.
Daleks can swim.
Yeah, they can.
Obviously, they can swim. Yeah. Unless he was, like, rolling along the bottom of the Thames.
Either way, they're waterproof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, cut back to...
is waterproof.
Yeah. Cut back to Bob and Balaclava. They've come upon a house.
A coven of women. Is what
nice.
They come upon a coven of women living in a shack.
Yeah, these two women.
Yeah.
One old lady, one young girl.
Yeah, they tell the coven that they want to go to the mine, but the coven says it's a bad idea.
Yeah, also says, like, don't go outside because there are savage dogs in the woods.
Yeah.
Which
we never see.
Which may actually also just be a lie. It's possible that they just say that in order to keep them there and then appease the Daleks by turning them in or something.
No, I think they did seem genuinely concerned for Barb and Jenny.
Really?
But yeah, I think they were. But at the same time, they weren't going to risk their own necks.
So,
when the Dalek does come and takes Barb and Jenny away, they look out the window. The old woman looks out the window wistfully. And is like, oh.
Yeah, but
they'd,
excuse
they'd
me.
They'd have been captured anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, important point is the only reason that a Dalek even shows up in the first place is because the old woman tells the young girl to pop out and tell the Daleks.
Oh, you think that, really?
I absolutely reckon that.
Okay. Maybe these cantankerous old bitches are worse than I thought.
The Daleks don't hurt them in any way.
Yeah.
In fact, the old woman says, like, oh, they're spared by the Daleks because they're actually more used to them than not. Like, they provide the mining slaves with clothes.
I hope those women died in the explosion.
Oh, I assume that they did.
I would have thought not. We'll come back to the explosion.
Yeah.
But I would have thought not, given that the Doctor survived. When he was, like, 3 meters away from Hiroshima. So, the old lady in the coven sends the girl out, as you said, maybe to go and get the Daleks?
I think there's a very, like, there's a gratuitous shot of, like, suspicious whispering between them.
Either way, she comes back to the door with a Dalek.
Yeah. Oh, I should say, at this point, they know that Barbara and Balaclava have food. Because they essentially have to bribe their way into the cabin by saying, like, here, we'll share our food with you.
Yeah.
And then the old lady basically goes, like, oh my god, that's fantastic. Like, so much food.
Mm-hmm.
Totally going to pig out on this. You ladies are dead bitches. And then she reminisces about the 22nd century. Take it away, Flathammer.
With what?
She reminisces about the 22nd century.
Oh.
It's a beautiful little bit of, like...
You had better notes on this, actually. I didn't make very many notes, because I thought you had it covered.
Okay, well, the only note I've made is really,
Like, I remember some of it. So there's, like, she's talking about pavements hovering in the street.
Yeah, it's moving pavements and an astronaut's fair.
An astronaut's fair? That does sound splendid.
Yeah. There is one thing that we've missed out. It's a tiny little cutscene. We cut back super-duper quickly to Ian and... what's his face? Leisure Suit Larry. God damn it.
They're travelling down in the way chute.
Yeah.
For 20 minutes.
20 minutes. Ian, by the way, still has not even loosened his double Windsor. And...
okay, so this... waste bucket was moving at some speed or 20 minutes.
The waste bucket, do you mean like when the two of them are travelers in a little pouch?
Yeah.
That's finally slid all the way down the glistening shaft?
Yes.
Is that what you're trying to say?
That's exactly what I'm referring to. But they're traveling for 20 minutes at quite a pace.
Yeah, and then it stops.
Yeah.
And he says they're 12 feet to the ground. Ian jumps out 12 feet, lands on his feet. Lands on his feet, fucking shoot. No, actually, he lands like totally Jean-Claude Van Damme's a little type roly thingy.
You know Ian can handle that.
He has mastered it.
And
then there's Zig Larry.
At no point doesn't lose a button. Nothing. Nope. He's wearing the most dapper suit. Yeah, the shirt's still pressed, the tie is still in place. Hasn't even, like, the second bit of the tie hasn't even fallen out.
Oh, no.
No. He's perfectly in place, every hair and place.
It's gorgeous. But then, so he jumps out 12 feet, but then, like a hunky cat is my note, but then, what's his face, Leisure Suit Larry, he jumps out, immediately hurts his knee, going to, this guy's dead.
Yeah.
Essentially. He's in the mines, middle of the earth, essentially, like centre of the earth.
Well, 20 minutes down.
I mean,
That's got to be core, right?
Well, it's close to the core. Spoiler alert, the Daleks are mining earth core. They have to be close to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Got to be pretty hot as well.
Yeah.
How do these people...
That's another reason. Like, he's still in his suit. Like, he's still got the jacket on with the tie done up to the top.
There's not a bead of sweat on his brow.
And he's just, like, inhabiting mantle. Like...
Yeah.
This guy's ice cold.
Very good turn of phrase.
Thank you.
Yeah, then cut back to the coven. Where the... this is actually where we got the proper reminiscing of the 22nd century. But then the suspect girl, she returns with a Dalek in tow.
Yep, and they take Barb and Jenny away.
Yeah, did we even say that the girl left? The old lady sent the girl away.
Yeah, we did say that.
All right, cool.
So, cut back to Ian. So, Ian and Larry are discussing what the Daleks are after.
Sorry. This is the first instance of exterminated in the entire storyline. 1 hour and 47 minutes in, first instance of exterminated. Soundbite.
Do not try to escape or you will be exterminated.
Nice. Who are they saying it to? They're saying it to Bob.
To Bob and Balaclava.
Jacqueline Hill. Screen history.
Kablamo.
Yeah, the first person who would ever be told to be exterminated.
No, in this storyline.
Yeah.
They were saying it to Thar before.
Did they say it to the Thar?
Okay. I think so.
Right. Okay.
They must have, otherwise we would have surely observed it.
Yeah, that's true.
The lack of extermination.
We're not that good.
No.
So cut back to Ian and Larry, and they're discussing what the Daleks are after, and they have a number of very good questions, which are never answered. One of which is, why are they using such primitive tools?
Yeah, they're hiding behind a bunch of wicker baskets.
These people are capable of travelling millions of light years across the universe, and why are they using wicker baskets and old women to carry single rocks at a time?
Like,
very good question.
Like, the magnetic core of Earth is just like, it's something that maybe 1,000 people could easily shift over a decade.
Like, so yeah, it makes very little sense. But like, also to bring it up in the script, like, they bring it up and never expand upon it. It's obvious the Daleks, so from the discussion they're having, like, it's obvious the Daleks are trying to get to the core.
Mm.
That's about as far as we get with it.
Well, it's a really, really cool thing here, because while they're having this conversation, they're hiding behind a bunch of wicker baskets, and then slaves arrive and start picking up one basket each, so, like, their cover is slowly diminishing, and then they're spotted by one dude who's like... Maybe that's Brendan Gleeson, actually.
Brendan Gleeson talks to Ian.
Brendan Gleeson talks to Ian and says, like, shit, you better, like, hide because there are more people coming or something.
Yeah.
Ian has the idea, like, let's just feign being part of the workforce.
Yeah.
But they're spotted by a robot dude.
Who turns out to be...
Phil. Leisure Suit Larry's brother, Phil.
Yeah. And
this is so sad.
It's the saddest part of the
episode. This is so sad.
For me. It's even sadder than the end. We won't spoil the end yet.
Yep. I agree. This is the tragic moment.
It's the saddest moment. So Phil doesn't remember his brother.
No.
Doesn't remember his wife. He's completely robotized. They fight.
Yeah, he tries to kill his own brother, and essentially the two brothers kill each other.
They kill each other at the same time. It's horrible.
Yeah, then alarms sound, the slaves return, they take up weapons and head up the shaft, I think, right?
Speaking of heading up the shaft, cut to David and Susan playing flirtatiously with a Fitch.
Nice segue.
I mean, Christ.
Oh my God. This is...
What is he, like, basically, I didn't explain that fully enough. He comes up to Susan and starts flapping a fish in her face.
Yeah.
What does he mean by that?
I think this is how one flirts in a post-apocalyptic, periphery of London.
It's a little bit blunt, though, isn't it?
It is very...
I'm going to stick my fish in your face.
It is beautiful, though.
I suppose, yes. Beautiful.
Well, Gorilla Dave basically just wants Susie's flower. That's what he wants.
And then the doc comes in and delivers a standout line.
Well, before the doctor arrives with his fantastic line, and yes, you will get to quote this.
Thank you.
Before he does that, Susie, like, jumps Gorilla Dave's bones.
Yeah.
And literally, this is what we see, literally rubs her clitoral area against his groinal pouch.
But, it's fantastic. Like,
so good.
The doc comes back. They try and pretend everything's normal, that nothing's happened. The doctor says, I can see something is cooking.
Yeah.
And then goes on to tell David what a good cook Susan is.
This is my granddaughter. Have you noticed her hips? She's got a cracking ass. She's a good cook.
He just wants to get rid of her.
Like, oh, yeah.
This is a stranding.
He recognizes her flower is ripe for the picking. And he then also says, essentially, he reckons that the base is the total base of operations. Like, that is Dalek HQ for the world, Hertfordshire. Yeah. And he
Bedfordshire.
Oh, Bedfordshire, sorry. Pardon me.
Get it right.
Wrong Shire. And then starts reprimanding Tyler Durden for not having picked up on this earlier. He's like, I'm surprised that you didn't focus all of your efforts on this place.
Yeah, well, it's quite true, isn't it? Like, they all knew about Bedfordshire.
Yeah, everyone knew about it. But Tyler Durden basically goes, well, it wasn't that easy, dog. Like, you haven't been around for the past decade.
Yeah.
We've been dying, like, constantly trying to get to this place.
We've been working really hard. Stop disparaging.
Yeah, exactly.
Or dead.
Ah.
And the Doctor, again, we get another little discussion of what it is the Daleks are after.
I hate this bit.
It's still not clear.
I hate this bit.
Why? He says that it can't be humanity because they're too insignificant.
Yeah, but what he's... Okay, that's the actual quote. You know what? We should soundbite this. But, fuck it.
We need to tamper with the forces of creation?
He says they are harvesting the energy of life and the forces of creation.
Well, that's quite true, isn't it?
To me, that sounds way too New Agey. That sounds super New Agey, dude. They're harvesting the energy of life. No, they're getting the fucking magnetic core out of there so they can put a battery in.
Yeah, but that is quite literally harvesting the... Well, I suppose they're not actually harvesting it.
No.
Because they're not actually going to use the mantle for anything.
Okay, maybe...
Like, that's the centre of the Earth. Like, that does generate, like, a lot of stuff for the planet.
I just...
Like, it's part of the reason we have life on Earth.
I just think it makes them sound like a hippie.
Yeah.
That's basically it. Okay, it doesn't matter. Sorry.
Yeah, it's 1964, Beatles are on the radio, like...
Yeah, I'm fine. Sorry, go on, back in the mines.
In the hit parade with satisfaction. Yeah. So we cut to Ian.
Yeah.
And he's seeing Barbara being taken off by the Robomen.
Yeah.
And moving rocks in wicker baskets. And we're all just sitting there wondering why.
And he tries to tell...
Brendan Gleeson,
Mr. Wensleydale, tries to tell him to let Bob Wine know that he's there.
Yeah.
This does not happen, though.
Yeah. Then we seem to come back to something which we thought had been forgotten about, which is Barbara saying, oh, we've actually still got Dortmund's notes about the bomb. Big whoop. So Barb, immediately, she takes the horse by the reins again, as she does throughout this episode, and tells the Daleks that there's an uprising on the cards, shows them a picture of the acid bomb.
Of the worst bomb in the history.
Yeah.
Of the Earth.
So, to which the Dalek says, yeah, that was the shit bomb that didn't work last time, wasn't it?
But you have very important information.
Yeah, so she and Barb asks to see the leader and is taken to the Black Dalek.
Yeah, and for no conceivable reason, Balaclava is allowed to tag along as well.
Yeah, she adds nothing to any of it. Like, she is, like, she's like one of those... is this a bad thing to say, but one of the French in the resistance movement who kind of collaborated. Like, she's one of them. Her take on things is just, I want to stay alive. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. I want to stay alive. I'm going to do anything I can to stay alive, including lug around a bunch of rocks in wicker baskets.
In my opinion, Balaclava is maybe, maybe half a gold star above the cowering guy back at René's Cafe.
Great guy.
Yeah. In the meantime, we get a tiny little cutscene of the Dalek Supreme Commander being told that that Operation Degravitate will complete in 2 hours. 2 hours.
So, would it cause total degravitation if you remove the Earth's core? Obviously, it would have a big effect, but if you put heavy machinery inside, the gravitational pull might not be that different. Yeah, but depending on how big and heavy the machinery is. Yeah,
well, it wouldn't work, because the machinery would require some space to move about, right? And the magnetic core is fucking solid. That's the whole point of it. It's so incredibly dense that it generates that it has its own gravitational pull.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let's just face facts. Neither one of us is a proper scientist.
My knowledge of science is below par.
Yeah, no,
at best.
Same here. Ditto lack of scientific know-how, but I'm pretty freaking sure that if you remove the Earth's core and you replace it with some sort of, propeller, then it's not going
to
work.
I was trying to think how it would work logistically. So they're going to run pipe into the Earth's core.
Into the empty space.
Which...
essentially, they've already hollowed it out, right? That's the whole point.
Where did they put it? And how did they transport it?
I don't know. It's probably somewhere in... Oh, actually, yeah, that's a good point. I was going to say maybe it's in space somewhere, but it's not. They don't have, a mothership. They don't have a fucking mothership!
Do they have a chute that's, blowing magma out into space?
I think basically all of... Was it Hertfordshire? Bedfordshire. Fucking hell. I think basically all of Bedfordshire has now turned into this ginormous mountain because they've just been pulling out magnetic core and just piling it on the sides.
If you'd hollowed out the centre of the Earth...
Yeah, it would reach the fucking moon!
It would do more than create a mountain around Bedfordshire.
The Earth now has a ginormous pimple. Does not matter.
Whatever. So the Daleks discuss they're nearly at the core and it's time to put the penetration explosive in place.
So they're going to run the penetration device down the shaft where it will explode.
Yeah, so they want to explode the core so they can have the control over the gravity, so they can fly the Earth around the universe.
Yeah, and this plan, incidentally, is mentioned out loud amongst the Daleks who already are aware of it in full view of Barb and Balaclava.
As we said, one of the great things about the Daleks is that they very slowly and very clearly expose the plot.
Yeah,
that's all Daleks
nothing
do.
Nothing but exposition. Yeah. In the meantime, incidentally, we've seen Ian turn up in HQ. And while the slaves ran up the shaft or whatever.
And he actually manages to get trapped inside the penetration device.
Is that now?
Yeah.
Oh, that is now, isn't it? Yeah.
He hides inside the penetration device. It closes and he's inside.
It's so Freudian.
Completely unplanned, by the way.
Yeah. Totally.
It's completely unplanned.
And he's about to be dropped down into, the fissure or whatever.
Dun, dun, dun. Episode 6, Flashpoint.
Now, quick question for you. Who was the waking ally?
Yep, I was just thinking that.
There was none. Who was the waking fucking ally? There was no waking ally. Who was it? Which ally did they have?
It's true. Did they have an ally?
Who awoke? No one.
No one.
No one.
There actually isn't anyone.
This might have been... Maybe the answer lies on the cutting room floor. Maybe Mr. Nation forgot to put it in. That's what she said. Maybe... Who knows? Either way, title should have been changed. Sorry.
Flashpoint.
Another fantastic... This could be Ryan's Flashpoint.
It's a very generic title. And it does apply. This one does apply. But there are a lot of Flashpoints throughout this arc. This isn't the only Flashpoint.
We start off with Ian hot-wiring the penetrator because somehow he knows what all the wires mean.
And also, there's a trap door.
Why is there a trap door?
Why is the penetration device completely hollow?
I know.
It's not completely hollow. It's got loads of wires in it.
And because he's in the process of hot-wiring it, probably the Daleks have noticed that something's amiss with the penetrator.
He's a scientist, dude. He can work wires.
So we have all the robo-dudes heave-hoeing the penetration device, which for some reason was attached to a rope. I thought they literally just let it go to fall down, but apparently they were counting on maybe having to pull it back up, which means that logistically speaking, they must have a piece of rope that is so long that it will reach all the way down into the middle of the earth.
More than that, a piece of rope that is so robust that it can withstand the earth's core.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not made of garlicanium. It's rope.
And then Ian climbs out. And this is where we see it. His suit jacket is torn.
Yeah. Finally. This is the first little thing that's gone wrong for Ian.
Ian finally gets his Captain Kirk torn shirt moment. Finally. And the Daleks have spotted Ian.
Yeah.
And they try to exterminate him. But instead, they shoot at the rope. No. He is
indestructible.
He is inexterminatable. Yeah. But they shoot at the rope, and Ian slides down, approximately hundreds of billions of feet and survives.
The man he is.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Bob and Balaclava.
Oh, and we also hear the Daleks discussing that they are going to now kill all humans.
Yeah.
And the next stage of the plan is to get the Robo-Men to kill everyone.
Wait, is that now? I think that's...
Yeah, that is now. They're going to repair the capsule, and once they're done, once it's all done, they're going to leave an offline saucer, and they're going to get the Robo-Men to kill all humans.
Kablamatron, I trust you, dude.
Right.
We do get a beautiful shot of Bob and Balaclava very loudly discussing how they're going to, I quote, cause as much damage to the main controls as they can, end quote, while they're being escorted by the Dalek god, to the what's-his-face. The Dalek, who can clearly fucking hear them.
So, but Barb is...
In fact, he can clearly hear them because he tells them to shut up.
Oh. Barb does weave a lovely cock and bull story here. She takes the reins again. She tries to confuse the Daleks. She starts talking about this group called the Boston Tea Party, who are, attacking from one side. General Lee, come back from the Civil War, risen from the dead to, lead the armies of the Earth.
Is it just me, or does she get the cavalry wrong? I think she shits up a lines here as well.
Well, she says it's the... I don't know. I can't remember.
I can't remember either. It's it's the 4th cavalry, the 5th cavalry.
What was it? What was his army called again?
I don't know.
The Army of Virginia. I think it was just the Army of Virginia. Lee is a wonderful general. I'd be terrified if if Lee came back from the dead, to lead an army. I'd be fucking terrified.
The Daleks, much like you and I, Flappy, have not done their Earth history. So they're flummoxed by all this. They're wait, what are you talking about? You said something about Indians, but we're in control of India. And she's no, I'm talking about Red Indians.
Yeah.
And they go fucking bananas. They're why was I not informed about this? So
they do, but Walter White style. They get them in a bike lock around the neck and strap them to it.
Before they do that, Barbara tries to maneuver the, and I quote, oral control, which is what is used to order, to boss the robo-dudes around.
Yep.
But she fails. It's a good attempt.
It is a good attempt.
Well done. Kudos for trying, Bob. But they're captured, or apprehended, and then, as you said, bike-locked to the wall, which, nice observation here, by the way, there are two bike locks in the wall on two sides of, a pedestal or something.
Yeah.
And they're clearly set in the wall. They're not, added to it when they're there, but they are at the exact different heights to accommodate both Balaclava Blondie and Barbed Wire.
Maybe there were many bike locks around the room, and they were just, sizing it. Oh, come on.
That's fantastic.
Get past it. Get past it. So, we cut to the doctor, Susan, Dave, et al. and they're on top of the mountain, leaning over, looking through binoculars, I think.
Yeah, looking down the mine.
Talking about how they're going to infiltrate the Dalek camp.
Yeah.
In the mine.
And Doc has a plan.
Yep, the Doc has a plan. They go down there. The Doc neutralizes the alarm system.
Yeah, but first they split up.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously they split up.
Always.
He tells Gorilla Dave and Susie to go and sever the lines to something. There are these electrical lines, wires.
But
and they're going to use the bomb acid again.
But not before David calls the doctor Doc, and he gets really upset.
No.
Is that because he's seeing David as his future son-in-law, and no, you must maintain your distance from me. Don't you dare fucking call me Doc.
It is beautiful.
Yeah, it's a lovely family moment.
By the way,
the
when he says that, he tells Tyler that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he calls him Cooper.
Cooper.
Yeah, that's the note I've made anyway.
Really?
My note is, Doc and Tyler Durden, whom the Doc calls Cooper, break into HQ and Doc tells can't make up his mind not to call him Doc. Sorry, Doctor. But we get another line from the Doctor before that, which is the Doc suddenly turning into Harrison Ford. He says,
give me back my family.
Get off my plane. No, he says, hey, you and my granddaughter go and sever the lines. And don't stop to pick daisies on the way. Great line. I don't know if this is like... Okay, either this is him trying to sound badass, or the whole picking daisies thing is like commentary on not being blinded by their burgeoning romance.
Yeah.
Maybe that's...
Well, as we've commented, he has seen it.
Yeah.
Like, he's actually encouraged it.
Yeah.
In fact, yeah.
Then, like, a series of cutscenes. It's Avengers Assemble.
Yeah, right.
While Doc and Tyler Durden are, like, doing the thing, Bob and Balaclava find out that there are two more saucers, and the penetrator is nearly repaired.
Yeah.
And Ian comes to at the bottom of the gully.
Yeah.
And he, like, props open this escape thing.
Finds some sticks. There are just random piles of sticks everywhere.
And, like, I say
sticks. I mean, they're huge. Like, tree trunks.
Yeah. Like, three tied together.
Tied together.
Yeah.
Which he puts in the chute to block it.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. So ridiculous.
Well, at the force that it would have been going down with, like with the gravitational pull to the centre of the Earth.
It would have been like putting a toothpick in its way.
Yeah, it'd be like putting a toothpick in front of a rainbow.
And when he's done doing that, he literally tightens his tie. He literally fixes his Windsor. It is a beautiful...
Badass.
Or is it a double Windsor? I'm not sure. Anyway, Doc and Tyler Durden find barbed wire and balaclava.
Yep, the Daleks are trying to get the capsule device repaired, trying to get it to drop again.
Yeah, and
they're planning how they're going to make their escape when everything blows up, so they're going to be picked up by the flying saucers. The Doc and Tyler then sneak inside, and they find Barb and Jenny.
Yeah, that's where we are.
Yeah. So Barb tells the Doc what the Daleks' plans are exactly, which is the first time.
The Doc explains, I can't remember how, but he explains why they need to prevent the Daleks' plan from being completed.
It's essentially like putting the stars out of alignment.
There you go. Yeah, like it's something along those lines. And on the Dalek CCTV, or through the Dalek CCTV, they're basically peeping Tomming on Susie and Gorilla Dave, pouring acid on the wires.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear this announcement on the tannoy saying that the Doc and Co. are to be intercepted, and we get a beautiful shot. It's the Dalek POV.
Oh, yeah.
It is gorgeous. Yeah, and the voice is so fucking creepy, dude. It is crazy. As the Dalek is approaching, it is the most, like, heinous Dalek voice so far. It is horrifyingly badass. And beautiful POV.
But the POV we
get... Screenshot on the website, people.
The POV we get is of the Doctor standing completely still, completely calm, holding his lapels.
Yeah, because he knows that they've gone through the wires, this Dalek is toast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic.
But as the Doctor points out, this plan for incapacitating them one by one isn't really going to hold much water. So they need to work out a new plan. And Barbara comes up with the winning solution, which is we need to talk to the Robo-Men and give them new orders.
Yeah, this is the oral control device that I used before.
So she has a wonderful idea. Then she tries to execute it. I can't even remember what she said. The Doctor
pushes... I am completely fucking useless.
The Doctor pushes her to one side.
Basically,
she goes, kill the Daleks, for God's sake, kill the Daleks. It's pretty fucking obvious, Barb.
Oh, we didn't say that the Dalek POV dude, 347, he starts melting inside. The fact that they called
it... always be 347. 357.
Oh, no, no. I think they've reassembled 347. And he is now, once again, being just melted to crap.
He's so shit. The one shit Dalek. The chink in the armour.
Yeah. Anyway, the robo dudes do exactly as Barb / Doctor ordered. So cut to the mines. Shy hulud.
Yeah.
It is crazy down there. It's going
mental. Yeah. They're tearing Daleks apart, limb from limb.
But they can't stop the bomb. The bomb is just about to explode.
Yeah. Yeah, so, they can't stop the bomb. But the bomb hasn't gone all the way down because of the sticks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which means, this reminded me a little bit of Armageddon. So, you know, when they were in Armageddon, they have to drill to the centre of the meteor to blow it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're just going to have a huge firework display if it blows up on the outside, which is what Ian has made happen. It's just a big firework display. It's just a bomb just above the Earth's surface.
Well,
just below the Earth's
surface. It's not only a fireworks display because it does cause a volcanic eruption.
That's true.
Yeah. And luckily, However, Doc and company, Ian and friends, have all gotten out just in time.
Yes.
So there's a volcanic eruption, no prob freaking lemo.
I can believe that they got out just in time. That they managed to get just about, I can believe, that they got out.
Well, kind of. Before, the Daleks were saying, like, there are 2 hours to go before Operation Degravity.
Let's think about this. How deep this mine is here.
Exactly. They have to travel the
20 way minutes. They were travelling down.
Descending. For 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
There must be a lift up, though. Surely there are stairs or something for the Daleks. There must be a lift.
But Ian, Doc and the troop had made it just outside. Literally just outside.
Yeah.
20 minutes underneath them. There's a nuclear explosion, like Hiroshima level. Like, you see the shots of it. It's absolutely enormous.
By the way, all of the humans must be dead.
And all that happens to the Doctor and Ian is they get a bit of dust on them.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and all the humans must be dead, right?
Yeah.
The humans are totally freaking dead.
You'd have thought so.
Yeah.
But apparently not.
And that's pretty much it. We're going to now fade to the TARDIS. Like, exterior TARDIS day.
But the Doctor has also said that it's impossible the Daleks survived.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
Which, I think it is quite possible a lot of Daleks survived that.
Yeah.
Like, all the ones in the saucers, certainly.
Yeah, exactly. Although that's totally true.
They did talk about the saucers.
There were two more saucers, is what they said.
They were going to get pulled back in, sucked back in, like the gravity or whatever.
Really? I don't know.
That doesn't make any sense. If that had happened, like, the Doctor and Ian would be dead.
Wait, there's another very important point to raise here. The Daleks said, we are in full control of India. In fact, they are the masters of the freaking Earth. There are Daleks all over the place. They're not just in freaking, Bedfordshire, doesn't even matter.
Jack Craddock tells us that South America, like, everywhere.
But no, it's fine, because we blew up a mine.
In Bedfordshire,
the penetrator is all flaccid and floppy. Doesn't matter. India, totally safe. Let's have Big Ben chime. Cut to, or fade to the TARDIS.
Yep, all the rubble's been removed.
Oh my god. Yeah, which, by the way, all of these future humans who are alive and helping to, like, get the TARDIS out of there, they must fucking know what the TARDIS is.
Not necessarily.
Really? So the Doctor goes, you know what, because I'm really important and shit, get that blue box out of there. They would have gone, buddy, far more important things to do than get some blue box out of
the
bridge.
We've got to repopulate the Earth.
Yeah. Starting with you, 16-year-old girl.
Quite, yeah.
Anyway, Big Ben chimes in the background, bookending everything quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyler Durden is told by the Doctor, it's just the beginning. Just the beginning. Beautiful.
Quite literally in that voice as well.
Yeah, cut to the scene we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, this is the big climax, in fact. So
paradoxically, it had nothing to do with the penetrator.
It's quite nicely done, though. So we start off, it's just Susan and the Doctor talking, and initially they just talk about quite mundane stuff, like Susan's shoe. It's lost a bit of its tack.
Yeah, so the Doctor takes the shoe off, goes like, oh, I'll fix this, I'll have it looking right as good as new.
Yeah, the Doctor talks about how Susan's has become disorganised since leaving school.
Hugs her and says she needs taking care of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but clearly he's not the man for the job, because Susan makes eyes at David at that point. And Ian is talking to David while Susan's making the eyes.
Yeah, Dave wants to become a farmer, he says.
Yeah, but he doesn't manage to talk to Ian for very long, because Barbara grabs Ian by the arm and just, like, move out of the way.
Yeah,
like,
goodbye here.
Yeah,
there's no goodbye.
These two lovebirds need to have a chat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So they go back into the TARDIS without saying a word to anyone.
Yeah.
Should be pointed out. And then Susie tells Gorilla Dave she doesn't belong to his time. Mm-hmm.
But David says, you need to stay here. I love you.
Marry me. Yeah, I want to marry you, Susie.
Initially she says, oh, I need to look after my grandfather or whatever. But he makes, you know, as has been building up throughout the episode, says you need an identity, you need time, you need roots.
Yeah. Well, also, let's be pragmatic about the whole thing. She is clearly the hottest woman he's seen in quite a while.
Maybe.
Like, the only other woman he's seen is fucking Balaclava.
Yeah, Jenny the Bitch.
Yeah. Exactly. So, essentially, Susie and Balaclava will now need to repopulate the Earth.
Yeah.
Well, at least London, right? Or Great Britain.
Well, there is all of India to consider.
Yeah. Oh, let's not even get into that.
There's over a billion people there.
Oh, God. So Susie tells him not to make her choose between taking care of her geriatric granddad and genuflecting before the majesty of Gorilla Dave's throbbing love for her. And then,
but she's given no choice.
Yeah, and she hugs him, says she loves him too. Like, she clearly doesn't want to leave him, but she has to leave him. But then, cut to interior of the TARDIS, a tacit agreement has been reached between Doc, Ian, and Barb Wire. Cablamatron.
I don't know. Did he discuss it with Ian and Bob?
Dude, freaking totally. There's like a shot of them standing there in complete silence, just looking at each other. Next shot, TARDIS doors closed.
Maybe. Okay.
I think so.
Anyway.
And it's not like Barbara and Ian tell...
They don't say anything.
Yeah, exactly.
So, In fact,
they've already said everything they're going to say in this episode.
Yeah.
They're not going to say anything else.
They're finished.
They're done.
They have no lines left.
That's a wrap.
So the Doctor locks Susan out of the TARDIS
and
tells her to get back and talks to her through the projector.
Yeah. But it is ridiculous. I mean, I think it is ridiculous. Okay, here's my note, okay? And please observe, just contextual information for this note. Even though she is a really hot young woman playing this part, she is playing a 16-year-old girl. And fucking Gorilla Dave is not 16. He is in his late 20s to early 30s.
No, I don't think he's as old as that.
Fine, late 20s. That's as low as I'll go.
No, I would say early to mid-20s.
Doesn't matter. She's 16, okay? So this is my note. The Doctor would rather she stay in post-apocalyptic England and sacrifice everything based on a teenage crush to become a farmer and marry some pedo they hardly know.
That was the point I made that is a little bit problematic. They've been together for, 2 days?
And fair enough, like, if you're in a conflicted situation, that'll bring you closer to each other.
Yeah, so 2 days could maybe be 2 months in, like, real time.
Yeah, but she is 16 and this is just a crush.
And in a year's time, the likelihood is they won't be together anymore.
No, it's actually more likely that she'll break up with Dave and get to banging Tyler Durden instead.
Well, she's got her choice of, like, thousands of men. Like, apparently she's one of the only women on the planet. She has her choice of everyone. Like, the Doctor has consigned her to be a whore.
Yeah, and a farmer. Like, it's
a farming whore.
It's slave labour. It's...
Look, she has needs.
It's human trafficking.
But her point is that she has needs as a woman.
Yeah, that's true.
She has blossomed.
Needs that the grandfather, for moral reasons, cannot fill. Anyway, Ian and Bob say nothing. Cablamatron, they dematerialise.
Well, the Doctor does say he'll come back and visit.
Oh, that's true. He does say, I will come back. And then Gorilla...
Which, as we know, he does.
Yeah.
Long time, but does.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, it's been a long, long time.
And, yeah, the TARDIS dematerialises. No one thinks this is weird. In fact, Gorilla Dave is standing right there, sees the TARDIS freaking dematerialise, makes no remark, I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. Nothing. But I reckon it's just because he's so fucking focused on betting his underage bride-to-be and putting her to work in the fields that he doesn't even care about the TARDIS suddenly vanishing.
And to be fair, he has just seen a Dalek invasion of Earth.
That is also true.
Like, everything sort of pales into insignificance when that happens. There was a 6-month meteor shower followed by a plague, followed by an alien invasion. Maybe a dematerializing box wasn't that big a deal to him.
Yeah. And then, then Susan chucks the TARDIS keys on the ground and exits frame wearing just one shoe. Because the Doctor, who could have very easily just stuck around for maybe half an hour extra and, like, emptied her wardrobe outside. Like, here, have some supplies. I've got plenty of food. Here's some fresh water. Here are some clothes. Actually, here's another shoe.
Here's some medicine.
Here's medicine.
For the 20 seconds.
Anyone need some apples and penicillin? Nothing. He just leaves her and doesn't even give her back her broken shoe. It is a wonderful. I love this closer.
It is a great.
End of Dalek invasion of Earth.
It is great. What
oh my god.
What an episode. Well, what to make of it? Reviews.
Reviews.
Do you want to go first or second?
I don't mind. Who went first last time?
I've got a feeling we're going to say quite similar things.
Probably.
I think, I'm not sure, but I think I went first last time.
Okay. Sorry, I don't remember. Okay, I'll go first then.
Smack it.
Okie dokie. I love this episode. I love it. I absolutely freaking love it. And I think I already had before, but I think I've absolutely now found my favorite Doctor Who writer so far. Terry Nation, you are a freaking genius.
We knew that he was going to be. I mean,
totally
genius.
Prefacing this review, I got to say, I have a soft spot for post-apocalyptic films. I like that scenario. Films of that nature are fantastically interesting, and this takes all the elements of like human desperation. All of a sudden, we have no creature comforts. Everything is just down to anarchy and revolution, and it puts it in a Doctor Who context. It's fantastic, and it works really well. And just with as with the other Terry Nation stories, fine, this is a long story arc, but it's also fantastically elaborate. Like, it's much more elaborate than, let's say, Reign of Terror or even Aztecs, I think. So,
about Marco Polo, that was pretty elaborate.
Marco Polo was pretty elaborate, yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, that's a good point. But anyway, it is a fantastic story. I love the suspense. It's got fantastic cinematography. It's got fantastic characters. We get the shit rid of Susan, sadly, just as she got good. As she got proper good.
Which I think is a point one of our fans made, actually.
Yeah, no, that is true.
One of our fans, I can't remember who it was, but basically said, like, 5 minutes before the end, she becomes an interesting character, and then, bam, she's gone.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible shame.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could have been doing that throughout.
I know! Yeah. I know!
I could have had that character throughout.
Yeah.
It's
they just didn't do it.
Shame.
But, anyway, so, with all of that, all of the fantastic suspense, all of the fantastic miniatures that we see in this thing, the fact that we have the robo dudes, which is crazy awesome, I don't know if we're going to agree on this. I'm giving this... Oh, wait, final note before I deliver my rating. I am not at all surprised that the two Terry Nation Dalek stories were the ones that were then adapted for the big screen with Peter Cushing.
Yeah.
Not at all surprised. It lends itself very well to like a cinematic experience. And this is not a TV show. This is a freaking feature film that's just been divvied up into bits. It's awesome. So I don't know if we're going to agree on this. I'm giving this a higher rating than Marinus. I'm giving this...
Bold.
I am giving this 4.7. I gave Marinus 4.6. I'm giving this 4.7. And the only reasons I'm marking it down from 5.0 are the fact, like, A, I would have wanted to know what the shit was going on outside of Hertfordshire. Because that makes no sense
whatsoever.
Bedfordshire. Really? Even in my notes, I've written Hertfordshire.
It's Bedfordshire.
I'd like to know what happened in the world outside of Hertfordshire. It's what I've written.
Okay, but you wrote it wrong. It's Bedfordshire.
Okay, fine. I would like to have known what happened outside of the few pieces of England that we saw. Like, we saw the mine, we saw downtown London, and we saw a tiny little bit of Edgware. That's it. Right? But nothing else. We know that the Daleks are everywhere, but we didn't find out what happened there. We don't know what happens next. For all we know, the Daleks are now going to be pissed off that their one penetrator was ruined and just going to go, you know what? Fuck this shit. We're going to blow up the Earth and leave. And Susie's there. That's crazy. We don't know that. So I'm marking it down from 5.0 to that. 4.7, hombre. Kablamatron, your turn.
What I think this episode does,
okay,
that hasn't really been done before, is it is finely nuanced throughout. We get foreshadowing. Everything that happens at the end of the 6-episode story arc is referred to throughout. And I think we knew what was going to happen at the end. Like, before we watched it, we knew. But at the time, you wouldn't have done. So, Susan leaving, for example.
Yeah.
We knew that Susan was going to go. We'd heard it before.
Yeah, but isn't that just a product... sorry to cut you off, but isn't that just a product of Susan leaving? If Susan had stayed on, you would have lost that element. It would have been just as nuanced as, let's say, Marinus.
No, but what I'm saying is the reason that... Well, the way Susan leaves.
Yeah.
At the start of this story, we get lots of foreshadowing of she's becoming a woman. We've actually seen that in previous episodes.
Super true.
It's built up, and it's sort of coming together here. Yeah. The Doctor starts to acknowledge it throughout the 6 episodes.
Yeah.
And we do get the first little love interest.
Yeah.
The first proper little love interest with Susan. Which makes her, and it is sad, but she becomes a much more rounded character. So by the end of these 6 episodes, Susan has become a person. Well, she's never been a person before. Which is kind of lovely and poetic.
She was a bit in the first one.
She has very much come of age. So in this episode, she's come of age, become a woman.
Yeah.
She's become a real character with her own thoughts. She's got her own sort of bolshy little attitudes towards things.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's quite lovely.
Yeah, I agree.
In its way. Fantastically entertaining episode. Like, so much shit happens. Like, and it's outside the remit of this review. I mean, obviously, we've just been talking about it for 2 hours. But, yeah, I felt so on edge. The Daleks were so menacing.
Yeah.
They were a lot more menacing than they were in episode 2.
Very true.
They seemed to have a plan together. It's sort of held back from us throughout the 6 episodes.
That's true.
We find out little bits more about what they're doing and what their plans are, piece by piece.
Bear in mind that the second story arc was the exposition of the Daleks. We didn't know them. Now we do. Now they can go full Dalek.
Yeah, and they have gone full Dalek. Yeah. And I think it was done very well. I think the way little bits of information were released about what they were actually trying to do. Yeah. And actually, the final sort of explosion when we find out that the Daleks are actually trying to steal the Earth's mantle isn't that ridiculous. No. It's actually a really big deal. Like, that is a properly big deal. It's not like one of those Doctor Who plots
But what is ridiculous, though, is that they want to replace the Earth's core with a machine that then allows them to pilot the planet Earth around the galaxy.
It's only ridiculous when you think about the finer detail of it. Also, we never discussed this. Why Earth? Why Earth?
Why not the moon? Why wouldn't it be easier to just maybe...
Well, a planet a little bit near Ascara. Like,
yeah.
If they wanted a big...
There are loads of other inhabited planets. Yeah.
But, you know, I'll take it on faith that maybe they wanted the Earth because it's the best producer of life or, you know, it's the most abundant planet.
We saw Ascara. They were perfectly happy living in a petrified world.
Birdless world.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. They were like, oh my god, they're about... Actually,
well, you know, it's we didn't hear again.
And it's actually the point I was going to make. Like, there are no birds. Clearly, the Daleks are fucking eating them.
Yeah.
Something is going on with the Daleks and the birds.
That's quite true. Daleks must feed on birds. They're all gone from Skaro, and now they're gone from Earth.
Totally.
How are they going to reintroduce the birds back into Earth?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I know. It's a whole nother story.
Plot hole.
I was completely enamoured. And when you said you were going to rate it higher than Marinus, I do not disagree.
Excellent.
I think that this is the best Doctor Who episode.
Yeah.
What
are you giving it?
I'm going to give it a flappy 4.8.
Oh, I nearly did.
As I said when I first walked in, I think I said this on the podcast, episode 1 was a flat 5.
Yeah.
It was a flat 5. I mean, it opened up all sorts of doorways, and actually by the end, it was all quite fulfilled.
Yeah.
Like, all of those doorways had been sort of gone down.
Yeah.
Apart from the bomb. And the, what was it called? The creature?
The slither.
The slither.
Oh, Jesus Christ. The freaking slither. That's another thing. Like,
slither did fuck me off a bit, which is probably why it's not getting 4.9.
Yeah. The slither is another reason why I'm marking it down as well. It's the freaking Yeti of the story.
But also, the slither was done very well. I mean, while it didn't really make very much sense, it was a great costume. It was a terrifying looking creature.
Dude, wait until the next episode.
I cannot.
Just saying.
I cannot.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway, flappy 4.8. I'm nice. So happy.
Oh, I'm so happy! Yeah. I'm so happy that Flap is happy.
But I know, it's probably expected that we would give this very high marks,
yeah.
But I can't avoid it.
Let's see if we're the only ones...
I'd love to be controversial and give this a 2, but I can't. I just can't.
I hate this story, it's terrible. Why is it in black and white? Yeah. Okie dokie. Let's see if we're the only ones who like this, shall we? So we've got we've got 3 listener reviews. Thank you so much for sending them in. Perhaps not unsurprisingly, 2 of them are from previous contributors. And
always love to hear from them.
They're freaking awesome, and we agree with them as well, which is good.
Yeah.
Which is very good. They're even more awesome for that. So, let's start off with one of them, shall we? This first one comes from Gina Guerrero. Hey, Gina.
What a surprise. So pleased to hear from you.
Find her on Twitter, at GinaGuerrero1. She says, I freaking loved this story. It was epic, tense, and emotionally engaging. I was glad to see the writers found a balance of stern and authoritarian and caring Doctor in this story. In this episode, we see the beginnings of the core characteristics that will define the Doctor. Standing, I don't know why I'm doing this voice, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
standing up to evil and fighting for the greater good using intelligence rather than brute force. I found it interesting that although it started with the usual trope of the group splitting up, having Barb, Ian and Susan, and the Doctor split off with their own companions, was a superb way of expanding their characters outside of their usual roles.
I love the TARDIS crew really stepping up and handling their shit in the various situations they were in, like Barb in the mines, Ian in the capsule, and the Doctor in the control room. What stood out for me in this story, and also frustrated me, was how they fleshed out the Doctor and Susan's relationship. So, when he left her, it was obvious it was as painful for him as it was for her to say goodbye. Was not expecting to have so many feels at the end. I think I'm actually going to miss Susan. Lastly, if they had done spin-offs back then, they could have given Ian one called Ian Chesterton, Saving the Universe in a Suit and Cardi. Overall, this was my favourite First Doctor story, so my rating is a 4.8.
Nice one, Gina.
I think that's not a bad mark. I might go along with that mark.
Fantastic review, Gina. Thank you so much.
I didn't mind the feely bit at the end, though.
I didn't either.
We haven't had feely bits before.
That sounded weird. I got to say, I really agree with her as well. I'm kind of going to miss Susie a little bit as well.
I miss the Susan of episode one. I miss the Susan of this episode. I don't miss the in-between.
Yeah, that is true.
Susan was like an abortion. She was.
Oh, my God.
What? No.
Well, are you suggesting that she's now...
Has to take that badly.
Has she now been aborted?
It's a metaphor.
She has now been aborted. Is that what you're saying?
She's an aborted character. Like, the first episode, she was obviously meant to be something. And then they aborted her character.
But actually, you know what? I don't think so. I can't remember if you told me this or if I saw this in some documentary or something, but the story I've heard is that she wanted to leave herself. She wasn't fired or anything.
But I think the reason she wanted to leave
was because they wrote her so freaking poorly.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, an abortion. Mm. Whatever. Okay.
You know what? I'm really sorry. Can I make a tiny little spoiler alert?
Uh-huh.
You know she's going to be replaced, right? Obviously, yeah. She's going to be replaced.
Yeah.
Yeah, the next one's no better. The next one is not a replacement for Susan in this story. The next one is a replacement for Susan in, like, the Aztecs.
Okay. It doesn't matter.
Freaking hate the next one. Anyway. All right, so...
Anyway, thank you very much,
Gina. Gina, always a pleasure.
So, next up, we have Davis of the Davis Principal fame, forever he shall be known. And he is at ShrubThe on Twitter. So follow him, people.
Yeah.
So Davis says, I've only seen the first part of this story so far, but I've got to say I loved it. It was the best ending to Hartnell's episodes we've seen so far. This is because it showed the audience something they didn't expect to see. The Daleks.
He goes on to say, I'd also like to point out that my quote-unquote theory still holds true. They are locked out of the TARDIS yet again, this time by a fallen bridge. By the end of this story arc, I predict that the Doc will do some fancy-schmancy timey-wimey stuff with the Dalek headsets and somehow use it to blow off the Daleks. Hombre, sorry to disappoint.
Finally, I'd just like to point out one hilarious aspect of this episode. The Doctor saying Susan needs a jolly good smacked bottom.
That is a fantastic quote.
It was. We did spend a little time on that.
Should we listen to that soundbite one more time?
Yes, we definitely
should. Soundbite.
What you need is a jolly good smack bottom.
That one was for you, Davis. Thank you so much.
I think we've done that soundbite three times. Well, actually, we mentioned it in the intro.
Yeah.
Then we did the soundbite during the episode. It's just fantastic. Almost unbeatable.
No pun intended.
Anyway.
Okie dokie. And lastly, we have a listener review coming from another previous contributor, JD, John David, at Marius Kane on Twitter. Marius Kane, that's Kane with a K. He's written a fantabulous review. We're going to split it up as usual. Am I starting?
Yes, you are.
Okie dokie. JD says, the Doctor manages to get Barbara, in brackets, who in this story is back to being barbed wire again, in brackets, Susan and Ian back to London, England, but sadly, he still hasn't figured out how to steer the TARDIS properly and lands them 200 years into the future. The team wander around the ruined landscape in what has to be one of the first proper location scenes of this scale, and eventually, rising from the Thames, the return of the Daleks.
The good. For the first time since An Unearthly Child, Part 1, Susan is almost enjoyable to watch. Going from twisting her ankle in Episode 1 and being generally useless to a character, like she has been since the Sensorites, to a point in Episode 6 where you're really feeling her indecision choosing between her grandfather and David Campbell.
Barbara, the heroine of Skaro, turns into the heroine of Earth, throwing acid bombs, protecting disabled people, and driving a bus. The writers of Doctor Who towards the end of Season 1 had planned to write out Barbara in this episode rather than Susan, but thankfully they came to their senses and kept the main character precisely where she belonged.
And I just have to chime in, Barbara was fantastic. She was fantastic. Episode, as we mentioned throughout.
He goes on.
He goes on. And of course, this episode delivers, without exception, one of the finest speeches ever completed by William Hartnell's Doctor, delivered in a way that makes you forget every fornicator, every gibberish, every misquote about shoes and a brink of distraction, culminating in possibly the single most heartfelt quote in Doctor Who. One day, I shall come back. Yes, I shall come back. A heartfelt scene that may as well be said to Carol Ann Ford as well as Susan Foreman.
The bad. Ian was in this episode, right? Somewhere? Doing something? The Daleks want to mine the core of the planet to fit a giant Ford Fiesta engine to it and drive around the galaxy picking up chicks or something. How exactly could that be considered logical, even to the science fiction writers of the 1960s? It would be just as stupid as the moon being ripped out of orbit and hurled into outer space with a moon base of people on it. They'd never write something that implausible. Oh.
Final score, 4.5. It has flaws, and probably more flaws than I've listed above. But honestly, it's the Daleks invading Earth. And until the Lucy Miller audiobook and The Stolen Earth with David Tennant, it wouldn't happen on this scale again.
Oh my god, JD, that is a fantastic review!
That's a rocking review.
That is a rocking review, thank you very much.
Yeah, we didn't see that much of Ian, it's true. But that is, like, yeah. JD has said this before about barbed wire, but this is the first time I've really felt it. I thought Barb absolutely drove this story.
Oh my god, yeah.
Everything that goes right is as a result of what Barb does.
And Ian sticks. Let's not forget Ian putting sticks in the way of a penetrator.
Do you know what? That was actually the icing on the cake. Sticks.
That's almost like emphasizing his intellectual absence in this episode. Anyway.
He's just a muscle man. Yeah. Like, right now.
Yeah. Guys, fantastic reviews all around. Thank you so much. I look forward to hearing from you again next week.
Absolutely.
And I think that concludes this episode of Who Back When.
This epic episode of Who Back
When. Oh my god, it has been epic. I'm looking forward to listening to it again right now. And then launching it later on tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be mental.
It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I haven't had this much fun, actually.
What, in approximately 10 days since the last time we did one of these?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, there you go. Yeah, sorry.
Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast is going to be back next time with a review of The Rescue.
I'm looking forward to seeing the new girl.
Don't.
Should I not be?
There's a fantastic upskirt shot.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Which earns her the nickname Upskirt in my notes. Anyway.
Guess you're going.
That's a spoiler alert for next week. People, thank you so much for listening. Check out whobackwhen.com. We'll be adding this to the website very shortly, and screenshots and whatever stuff and things. And of course, the three fantastic reviews you just heard. Add your own as well. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/whobackwhen. Follow us on Twitter. I am at Ponkin.
And I'm at One Too Many Mornings.
Yes, you are.
Sort of.
And catch you the next time. Rock on, people.
Catch you on the flap side.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
One of your own. High five, dude. Finally.
It's like an admixture.
Oh, wait. Why has this not happened before? That was so natural. It sounds so natural.
Just flowed out.
That's what she said.
Anyway,
okie dokie. People, ciao.
Back when.